Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Good morning, everyone, and our readers are still popping up on my phone list. In fact, we got six now. I think, let's see who we're missing. We're only missing one person so far. Oh, here we go. Actually, we have someone really special on the line right now, and so I'm just going to type in a couple things here. Don't mind me. I'm producing the show as well, so it gets a little crazy here. So just to let you know who we've got, let me see. We've got Jerome Bell. He's here. Wendy Arthur is here. Katie Caven is here. Jessica Rivera is here. Brianna Cannon is here. And I want to just start the show. We're going to be improvising and going crazy as we usually do. Someone who's brand new to Action Radio and who I first saw on, I think it was One American News, about maybe 2 weeks ago. And that's G. Van Fleet. And I hope I pronounced your name right. But this is somebody who survived Mao's Cultural Revolution as a child, came to the United States, and someone I hope to talk to a whole bunch on the show. So I just want to welcome her first to the show. And if you want to, kind of, you're going to listen in for a little while, see what's going on. I think I said, you know, if you want to just kind of casually listen in. But first, I just wanted to welcome you and thank you very much for coming on the show, first of all. So if you, anything initially you want to say, please feel free, and then we'll get to our reading. But it's great to have you. Good morning. Hello,
good
G.
Good morning.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yes,
don't worry.
Yes,
yeah, look.
I wasn't sure.
Did I surprise you?
Yes. I'm okay. waiting for the reading.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Okay, so I just want to greet you, first of all, because I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank
so
you.
I'm going to introduce you. Let me introduce our folks as they called in. And so let's bring live Jerome Bell. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm having a great time. Let's get Wendy Arthur here, make sure everybody's live. Wendy, good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. I feel like a game show. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. And
all right. There we go. And Jessica Rivera, good morning, out in California.
Good morning, everybody.
We woke you up early. But first of all, thanks for coming on the show. And
of
the person
course.
Who regularly, oh, I'm sorry, and the person who regularly has this time slot, Brianna Cannon. Good morning, Brianna.
Good morning. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
There we go. Brianna is our superstar reporter who does the government inquiry report at this time. So let me give you a little background. I'm going to play some fife and drum music, and then what we're going to do is I'm just going to call on folks in the order that you have. And sometimes I stray a little bit from the format I try and arrange because improvising is just much more fun. But this is a serious day, but we're still going to have our lighter moments. We're still going to be able to talk. And so we'll go through the declaration. And then I'll take a quick break for the stars and stripes, and then we'll come back and go through the panel again for commentary on the state of our liberty, and then probably take another little quick musical break for America the Beautiful, and then it's a free-for-all. And anything you want to say, introduce yourselves, tell more of your story. That's probably when G. Van Fleet will kind of join in the conversation, and that's how it's going to go. Like I say, we're really informal here. This is a place where you can say pretty much anything you want. This is the ultimate free speech zone. Yeah, question? Was that you, G? All right.
No.
Okay. So just a little housekeeping here. If anybody has any background noise, I'm gonna leave all your lines live because it'll be easier that way. Someone won't forget to unmute. But if you do have some background noise, if something's going on, just mute your phone. And then when it's your turn to read, make sure you unmuted it. Otherwise, we'll all collectively say, "Where are you?" Anyway. I got some information on the Declaration from History.com and the National Archives, and I've kind of compiled them together because nobody seems to have a complete story on this. So what I've derived is it says the Declaration of Independence was our first formal statement by our nation asserting our right to choose our own government. In the early 1770s, more and more colonists became convinced that Parliament intended to take away our freedom. In fact, the Americans, early Americans, our colonists, saw a pattern of increasing oppression and corruption happening all around the world. That is interesting. That I didn't know, and that's something I think we should talk about. Anyway, it says Parliament was determined to bring its unruly American subjects to heel. Britain began to prepare for war in early 1775. When armed conflict between bands of American colonists and British soldiers began on April 19, 1775, known as the shot heard round the world, Americans were ostensibly fighting only for their rights as subjects of the British crown. By the following summer, the movement for independence from Britain had grown, and delegates of the Continental Congress were faced with a vote on the issue. On June 7, 1776, Richard Henry Lee introduced a resolution that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be, free and independent states. In mid-June, a five-man committee, including Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin, were tasked with drafting a formal statement of the colony's intentions. The Congress formally adopted the Declaration of Independence, written largely by Jefferson, in Philadelphia on July 4th, a date now celebrated as the birth of American independence. Just to let folks know, too, we've got Marco, who's our most regular live chat person, who checks in from the Netherlands, where they don't have a holiday today. But Marco, feel free to comment on the state of your liberty in the Netherlands and also on what you any perception of what's happening in this country, which is pretty devastating at this time. All right, so let me get some music to get us all in the mood to read. Yeah, scroll right down here. I'll be back in a minute, and then the first person I'll be calling on to read the Declaration of Independence is Wendy. Be right back. That should stir your patriotic fervor. And just to let folks know in the audience, I've asked everybody to give like a quick one sentence description of themselves, what they're doing, you know, on the show, anything like that. And we're going to save all the more complex stories for our commentary period after we read the Declaration. So let's get started. Wendy?
Good morning. My name is Wendy Arthur, and I'm the reporter for the Oh My God Report. It's Christianity with a Kick. In Congress, July 4, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another, and to assume among powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and the nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
Katie?
Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shewn that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for the future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance in their operation till his assent should be obtained, and when so suspended, he is utterly neglected to attend to them.
Okay, we do have one of our folks missing, so we have two new people, or I haven't been on the show for a while. We've got Jerome Bell and Jessica Rivera. In fact, we have two people. Yeah, so let's go. Jerome, do you want to read the next section? And just skip up to where Catherine's position is. And if you want to join us, and then I'll have Jessica ask her for the next section because Jonathan's not here either. So, Jerome, do you want to take the next section?
Sure.
Any of your regular sections, too.
Catherine.
What's that
okay,
now?
Okay, so I'm reading for Catherine. I'm reading for
You're reading
Catherine,
for Catherine.
Correct?
Exactly, yeah. So hopefully she'll join us later.
Right.
But for right now, please go ahead. And then, Jessica, I'll ask you to read the next section because Jonathan's not here either. And you'll still read your own section so you get more reading in here. Jerome, if you want to introduce yourself with a sentence and then begin.
Jerome Bell. I am the host of the Radical Republicans Live Show. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise. The state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states. For that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing to assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers.
Thank you. And Jessica Rivera, if you'd like to introduce yourself with a sentence and take Jonathan's part.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Rivera, and I am a political correspondent for Right Side Broadcasting. So he has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent.
And we're going to do the same thing again, Jerome, and then Jessica. Jerome?
For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravished our coast, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation.
And again, Jessica, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow their usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and a consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends.
And I want to thank both of you because those were extra parts you weren't anticipating reading the first two. And so thank you for that. And Brianna, your turn. And then you've got the anchor position, the paragraph everybody knows.
All
Brianna?
Right. I'm Brianna Cannon, and I do government inquiry on Action Radio. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress, assembled appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have the full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do, and for the support of this declaration, with the firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Yeah, I think as I thought about that, the first paragraph and the last are the ones we all remember, but the middle ones are the actual list of grievances, and that's quite a list, especially when you consider how many of those are still happening today. All right, we're going to take a break for a couple minutes. We got the Stars and Stripes Forever. And so if you want to mute yourself, make some noise. Wendy's going to rush out and grab another cup of coffee and be right back. Sorry, Wendy. I'm just having too much fun here today. And then let's – that was a great reading. And let me just find my music here and take a quick – here it is. And we'll be right back in about 3.5 minutes. ¶¶ I don't mean to laugh. I just got a comment from Mark. He says, it sounds like I'm in an Andre Rieu concert. I'm not even sure who that is. But that's The Stars and Stripes Forever, written by John Philip Sousa, inventor of the Sousa phone, which I was privileged to play all the way from junior high through college. And I know every note on that song. I'm still hearing it in my head. I could probably play it, not quite as well as I could back in college, but it's just fascinating that these things stick with you. And every time I hear The Stars and Stripes, it's like, yeah, I'm back on my sousaphone. I'm playing away and feeling wonderful about it. Because now, and you're pretty much free to say what you want, State of Our Liberty, the effect it has reading the actual declaration, which very few people do. All the other broadcasters, except Jessica, who was nice enough to join us for a while, she had to leave right away, so she has left the show. But they're not even working today. They're off barbecuing and buying used cars, whatever else they're doing. But they're not broadcasting, and we are. And so I want to thank you for giving up your time on this day to celebrate the Declaration of Independence and try and get our independence back, basically. So I'm going to go pretty much in the order we had before. We've got a couple of folks missing, and we do have one extra person here, Gilles Van Fleet, who's been nice enough to join us. And this is her first time on Action Radio. So, Gilles, like, again, once I get through my commentary, if you want to say something, feel free. Looks like Bianchi's just joined live chat. Hopefully he'll call in soon. And also I've asked Josie as well to call in and a couple of other folks. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, Wendy, do you have a statement for how this gets you on this amazing day?
Yes. I love the part in our Constitution that says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Because there are things that man cannot dictate. God himself set things in order, and it cannot be changed. And even though man has tried desperately to take over the position of God and tell us what we can and cannot do, that only works if we agree to that. And we do not have to agree to it. We do not. I reposted something that you had posted where it showed the illustration of everybody being made to bow,
go through the four stages.
One
of that.
Person
that's,
stood up.
That's pretty key. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's very key, and it just takes one. Mm-hmm. So seriously, we have got to understand that God Himself gave us our rights, and we cannot let somebody else take them. We have been doing it for a couple hundred years now, letting the government take over and take our freedoms away. And, when it fought so hard to get them, it's time for us to do the same now, because we do have a tyrannical government. It is totally out of control. We have the right to disassemble it and start over.
Yeah. Yeah, Jonathan just joined us. I'll get to him in a little bit. Katie, you're pretty new to Action Radio yourself. So how's this for, I think it's your first time on the show, although we've certainly done some behind the scenes work on projects and things like that. What do you think?
Good morning. Well, I think, I'm just still processing what Wendy has said about endowed. God has given us all gifts and rights, and we are all created equally in our own way. And I feel like that that actually also rings very important for me, because I feel like we lose ourselves in the world, in this carnal environment. And I feel like in today's society, as I'm growing older, and I'm starting to connect more dots, and I'm starting to see how things function and operate in our society, I guess I look at money isn't the tool, or money isn't the goal here, that like our freedoms are really the goal, and that we have to, stay strong under God and just follow Him and make sure that we are true to ourselves. And I feel like we can conquer anything. So yeah, I feel like our world is definitely very carnal, and I think that we all have the power to overturn that ourselves. And, I guess it's still morning. I'm like waiting on my cup of coffee here, so I don't know really what else to say at this point.
That's okay. No, that's fine. You're doing fine.
Thanks.
Well, sure. And just to follow up on Wendy said, too, that what makes our country so special is the first time the founders of any country didn't put themselves first as the ultimate power. You look at any of the monarchies, dictatorships, tyrannies, even democracies. You know, they always put the government on top and everything flows from the government to the people. And this is the first time God was put first and that our rights come from God. And there's a firewall between government and us. And that is God. That is the Constitution. That is the Bill of Rights. And this has never happened before. And this is why what's happening now is so dangerous. And I'll call on Jean a little bit, see if she has a comment. But let's go next to Jerome Bell. And let's hear a little bit about your story, because your story is quite interesting, from Navy chief to someone who ran for Congress on our legislation. By the way, Jerome's the first person that actually ran on our citizen legislation as part of his campaign for Congress. And someone who served this country for decades. I'd be very curious your impressions from reading the Declaration and what you think, what's going on now. Sir?
Hey, thank you, and good morning to everyone this morning. It was truly a great reading. You know, when I go back, you know, and read this and look at this and seeing what's happening here in the United States with the parties, with the Uniparty, let's say, right? To me, the Uniparty has become King George, because I believe we are in a course of human events when it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another. You know, to me right now, that first paragraph describes our parties. I don't believe either party, the Democrat Party nor party, represents the people any longer, and they just represent themselves and represent government. And so I believe that's where we are now. That's the most important part to me, looking, you know, and running for Congress and seeing and being around, you know, what people would call the swamp, and being around these people and knowing what they stand for. And most of them stand for nothing but themselves. They just want power for themselves. They want money for themselves. They understand that this is a, being in Congress for most of them is a free meal ticket on the American people, and they can write bad laws and nothing will happen. They can write unjust laws, nothing will happen. They write laws for themselves to break the law, which, according to Frederick Bastiat, is a perverted law and should not be instituted amongst us. So we are in a state of tyranny, and the Declaration of Independence, like I believe what Katie said, that we have the right to abolish it. And we are at the point to where it needs abolishing. Most people don't understand that we truly still have the power because we outnumber them. And I mean, and so people have to come to the realization that if they want to be free, in the words of Thomas Jefferson, the tree of liberty must from time to time be refreshed with the blood of patriots and tyrants. And I believe that's where we are.
Yeah, a couple of comments real quick. It's interesting that I see the world, I think a lot of people see the world as ballots is a primary way to do it. Okay, a little bit of background noise from somebody, so you might want to just mute for a second. And if ballots don't work, then we have to go to bullets, you know, and I don't want that. One of the biggest reasons I created Action Radio was to give us a third alternative, and that's bills. So in other words, changing the system whereby the lobbyists pay for the legislation by buying Congress and then to the president, or lack thereof in this case, through the regulatory agencies to regulate us. Whereas I want to reverse that and have we the people write the legislation we consent to be governed by, lobby it through the Congress because of exactly as you said, the superior numbers in our votes, who then, you know, go through the president and the regulatory agencies regulate the special interests. So that's where I see us going. I got a question for you though. One of my proposed bills, you know, floating around my head, is to abolish party membership for any member of Congress, anybody running for Congress. And of course, the states could do that on the state level as well, because as you say, they don't represent the people anymore. They represent their party. It's the party that gives them their chairmanships. It's the party that gives them the money to run on. It's the party that tells them how to vote. So anybody that's in Congress right now is representative of their party and not of the people that put them there. So would you support that bill, or maybe even help me write it? What do you think?
I would definitely support that bill.
Okay.
You know, because being one of the people that would definitely go there and should have been there to represent the people. I would definitely represent the people. So absolutely, absolutely, and I agree 100% with that.
Okay. Guess what? You're stuck with it. You're going to help me. So much fun. Latest lady on the air. That's Action. That's Action Radio. That's what we do.
Okay, there you go. And
yes, sir.
Yeah, and I was just saying one comment and let someone else speak. And, you know, because you mentioned the ballot or the bullet, well, you know, that's what Frederick Douglass said. You know, we have the jury box, we have the cartridge box, and we have the voting box. So, of course, the cartridge box was last. So, you know, and those are the three boxes that we have.
And we're now we've slowly, got technology.
Impeding, impeding on that third one. So, okay. You can be quiet now.
Oh, no, okay. And don't mind me. I interrupt constantly. It's probably the biggest flaw I have as a talk radio person. Let's bring on Brianna. Brianna's the youngest member of our team here. And, you know, I call her our superstar reporter who does the government inquiry report. And if you've missed some of her reports, she's brought to us the full extent of Agenda 2030, 15-minute cities. I think we've done climate change stuff. We're going to look into mosquitoes, vaccines, and Bill Gates. And just an amazing amount of information that she has brought to the show. So, and Brianna. And like I say, as someone who is, you know, our youngest member here, how does the Declaration affect you having read it and especially your friends? Do your friends talk about this anymore? I mean, how important is it, you know, that we are the exceptional nation, that we are, you know, the country that does not put the government first in terms of power? And just any observations you have?
I think the Declaration of Independence kind of displays the ultimate kind of patriotism it means to be an American, you know, to understand that, you know, God is in charge above all and, you know, what the government is supposed to do. And I'm glad that Jerome had mentioned Frederick Bastiat, because in the law he really explains this. He really explains the dangers, and then he goes at the end into what you know, America and freedom should be and what liberty truly is. And I think the Declaration of Independence kind of shows that too, you know, what's being done wrong and what they deserve. And our founders, if we look at America now and we see all these problems, and what it is it's everything that our founders had feared. And that's the whole reason that they wrote our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence, was to give us a different way, something that was the exception to the rest of the world. And now we've gone so far to where we're becoming more and more like the other countries of the world because we've strayed so far from this. But I feel like it might be good to read a couple of quotes like this, and it actually goes along with what Wendy was saying as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's one by Patrick Henry, and it says, "This great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religion, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ." And then there is one by Thomas Jefferson, and it says, "What country can preserve its liberties if its rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance and let them take arms?" And I think that's a big thing that, you know, we're lacking on a wide scale, but we do have a lot of people that are kind of willing to have that patriotic spirit and call out what's wrong and that want change, kind of like these patriots did so long ago. And there was a lot of loyalists back then, and there was a lot of people who were kind of in the middle who didn't care either way. But they had these amazing people going out and changing their minds and getting them to fight. And I think that's really important, and that's exactly what's going on right now. I think we're kind of seeing this rerun of this want for liberty and this restoration of this declaration that they were making like over 200 years ago.
Yeah. Well said. And I feel like it's my job of my generation to make sure that your generation doesn't have to live under tyranny like so much of the rest of the world. And so we have our work to do to leave you something where you can live free. And so we're going to be talking a lot over the years to make this all happen, which is pretty amazing. G. Van Fleet, did you want to join us at this time and make a comment at all? Introduce yourself?
Yes. So I'm unmuted, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, you're unmuted. You're doing fine. Yep.
This is such a special way for me to celebrate 4th of July with a group of patrons like you. This is just so special. And I'm just so moved. Well, all what you said, and 4th of July become more and more special for me because it is the day when I think about why I tried so desperately to come to this country 37 years ago. I come here for freedom and for American dream. And all this is built on this so important document, the most important document in human history, which tells us that we have rights, and our rights is not from a king, an emperor, a politician, or government. It's from God. And unfortunately, this is still an alien concept for many, many people, including most of the people in China, because to them, and including me, when I grew up in South China, we don't have rights, and whatever rights is from the government. And so I just so disheartened to see that this is not being taught to our children here in America. They were taught to hate this country. And they're taught that this country is a racist country and should be condemned. And so coming to this country 37 years ago, I absolutely love this country. I'm grateful every day what this country afforded me, liberty and my American dream. And unfortunately, I thought when I left China, I left communism behind me. No, it's here. It's here, and it's taking roots. And the bankrupted communist ideology now become mainstream. And the people, young people, they worship the state. They believe that the state should be the one to take whatever wealth from one group and give to the other, to take the dream from one group of people with merit, to give it to people with identity. And this is everything else I see, cancel culture and identity politics. That's exactly what I experienced in Cultural Revolution. That's exactly why I escaped China and come to this free country. So on this special day, I really reflect why I come here and reflect that our freedom, our American dream are slipping away. And then make me more determined that I should fight for it, so that for the future generation, they will have the freedom, they will have American dream.
You know, it's such a pleasure to have this group here today, to be able to listen to you all. And some of you I know for a long time, and some I'm meeting for the first time, like she. And it's just, if I don't pronounce your name right, please let me know. Don't worry, I can easily be corrected here. All right, let's bring Jonathan in the conversation. He's been listening for a while. Jonathan does our legal reports. And Jonathan, you want to give a quick background for you, and then maybe some of the January 6th work that you've been able to do, and then your reflections on the Declaration of Independence.
Well, there's, of course, there's always a lot to talk about. I have
Why
to
don't
be
ask easy questions? You know, I don't ask
no,
easy questions.
Too. We're back. We're here in Washington, D.C. I flew up to help yesterday with a bail revocation hearing where they tried to throw somebody in jail for getting in a car accident and having a medical marijuana card, which is not really my issue, but it's not their issue either. It's none of their business. And so I have, here on TV in Washington, in the nation's capital, there's news coverage of July 4th being hot dogs. You know, what topping should you put on hot dogs or not? There's absolutely, of course, no awareness of what the holiday is about, what we're about, what this country is about. And they don't want to anyone. It's like if they let people into the Capitol, they'd be reminded of the Declaration of Independence sitting there. So I think it is a tremendously important educational project. You know, if you take away, we said often on the show that, George Orwell wrote 1984 as a warning, and the leftists of both parties took it as a how-to manual.
Yep.
And if you rob people of their history, they don't know their rights. They don't know who they are. They don't know what to watch out for. And that is that is scary. That that you know, the worst paper in the country, the Washington Post, has the slogan atop. It says democracy dies in darkness, which of course means that democracy dies at the Washington Post. because all we've got is darkness and ignorance, and people need to know who they are. So I'm sorry I got distracted with some things about a client earlier.
That's okay. You got work to do. You know, believe me, we always have everything covered here. So I just appreciate having you on. So and I appreciate the work that you do.
We need a lot more support. And again, this is the my greatest concern as a Christian. I feel, you know, I know a lot of people call to a particular country and things like that, and strangely, I feel called to try to bring reformation in the political realm. And, you know, I worry most about whether or not there are enough Americans, you know, like the Lot and Abraham and the city of Sodom. He said, if there's 50 good people, will you save the city? If there are 40 and 30, and basically God couldn't find 10 in the end who were, you know, who were good enough to save the city. And I worry about whether there are enough of us for God to give us, you know, one more chance. So I sure wish a lot of people would step up and you know, everybody. You know, one of the things that our country culturally was built upon, and I saw this when I was over in the former Soviet Union and after the, you know, as a Christian, as a missionary, and, you know, that all these sayings in our culture came back to me as they weren't, you know, I realized they don't follow them, like things like a stitch in time saves nine rather than just waiting until everything falls apart. And, you know, many, many hands make light work is one of the ideas that, you know, that we were built upon. So I'm not asking for people who have worked very hard to work even harder. I'd like to see everybody do a little, and I'm not sure I see that with our country today. But anyway, so I think it's interesting in the Declaration of Independence how they go into some, you know, the very specific examples, and how when we look back and realize that this was, well, the Declaration, let me back up here. The Declaration of Independence, of course, was in some sense a declaration of war. At least a declaration of, you know, you don't have to fight us. I mean, if you leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. But if you come fight us, we're gonna fight back. And some of the examples given there today seem, you know, routine. Things like he does not allow legislation to be passed, which is necessary for our well-being. You know, he sent armies of bureaucrats here to what they call ministers to harass us. All of these things that are the specific examples. Of course, there's an interesting thing that the Declaration of Independence gives examples, but some of the examples would be like, you know, just an average day of being abused as an American citizen. You know, he has refused to assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. I mean, the only thing we've seen that the federal government is good at is caring about itself. like the, you know, the whole January 6th movement, I mean, the vast majority of people were just there kind of like watching. But of those who did more, you know, it's like there were people who were demanding change. And, you know, against that, the federal government can move fast and harshly. But to do anything that would help the people, they just never get around to it. And they make this fake, these phony gestures. It's like Steve Bannon calls them failure theater among the Republicans. Like, we put in this big theater, and then at the end it's a failure, and it's like, oh well, we tried, and like, no, you didn't. You just tried to fool everybody. So he has refused to pass other laws to the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. And I assume you've read all this on the air, but I just want to draw attention to the fact that these are things that we endure regularly here in the country now. So we have the form of a representative republic, but certainly not the reality. And
the tolerance of treason, the tolerance of tyranny, something I want to talk about when we sort of do our free for all. But quite amazing.
Well, the lady talked about leaving communism in China, and of course we've mentioned, I keep trying to help clarify that we think from the movies that communism is just people who wear Russian fur hats or maybe Chinese, outfits. Mm-hmm. And we forget that communism came from Austria and Germany. It's a philosophy. It's not limited to any particular country or any particular ethnic group, and it can arise anywhere. It came from the faculty lounges of Europe. Communism is very European.
So it's freedom, because freedom came from Britain, from England. Our founders are mostly British. Isn't it fascinating that of all the places in the world, from Confucianism to all the traditions of all the different religions of all the different places in the world, and the two dominant political philosophies, communism and freedom, both came from Europe. I just find that interesting.
Right. Well, and my parents wrote a book on the Pilgrims by going back and tracing their history before they got on the ship. They went back to who they were and what happened in England and then in the Netherlands and things. And they were surprised to find that among the English people, they viewed the American Revolution and the Pilgrims as ultimately saving them. They weren't bitter or negative. They saw that, the growth of freedom in the colonies and the New World ultimately, brought it, ultimately changed England as well as the new North America. And they saw the cause of liberty and as giving them their freedom.
Yeah.
Back in England.
It's amazing when Wendy was talking about that cartoon that I posted before. It's where you have everybody standing tall, and then the one person gets out the whip, and everybody bows down except one person who stands up, and then a few people stand up, and then everybody stands up, and the person with the whip bows down. And the comments on that were, and they called it stage four, when the person with the whip bows down, and they're all like, oh, please help us get to this stage, and, I pray for this, and that's nice, but I'm thinking, well, what are you going to do about it? we're a place where people do things. And one of the biggest problems is people like, oh, I really want to be free. I want this. I want that. But they're not willing to do anything. And freedom is a participation activity. You can't just sit back and wish for it and want it. And praying is wonderful. I mean, I agree. But turn your prayers into actions. Otherwise, God's sort of looking at you going, what are you going to do now? And that's how I feel about it. Sure. Then we'll go free for all in a minute. Yeah.
Two other things.
Sure.
I've been doing conservative activism since 1984, and watching my mother and others doing it when I was just old enough just to watch, not really doing it. So it seems like we are forever caught in this idea that's saying most people will just watch sports and be apathetic and everything like that. But of those who finally wake up and say we need to do something, they immediately want to go to violence, to guns, we need to hang the people. Our founders went to extraordinary lengths, as I've mentioned before they got to the point where they said, look, we can't work. We've tried, we've sent delegations, we've done all these things. They tried very, very hard to work things out peaceably. They saw England as their cousins. They wanted to be.
Oh, they probably were. They wanted to be, I'm sure they had family back there. So yeah, that actually that makes a lot of sense.
They wanted to be Englishmen, but they expected that first of all, they felt like they were being treated as second class, which under the Uniparty, of course, we are being treated as the peasants. And secondly, they expected better of being an Englishman than what was happening. So they finally got around to doing it. They didn't rashly just rush and grab their flintlock. But on the other hand, I feel like an awful lot of people really don't know how to win elections. So you have Jerome Bell, for example, where the Republican Party has to push a completely, just like a shadow of a person as, to oppose him, because she will, play along and won't rock the boat. In fact, since she was elected to that congressional seat, have you ever heard of anything?
Even know who she is.
Exactly.
Talk about that.
Well,
okay.
That's not good. If we don't, because the whole Republican Party established, and in Virginia, it's very bad because they work in Washington, and they're, there's some of the worst rhinos in the country are the Virginia Republican Party. And but the point is that we really don't know how to win at the ballot box. So everybody wants to run to the ballot, to the bullet box, because we really have not learned how to defeat these people in elections. We said, well, we've tried, and my answer is
cheat.
No, we haven't.
Yeah,
we have not
Let me just hold you for a little bit, because I want to open up the discussion to everybody and talk about the state. No, it's great. No, it's an amazing statement you're making. I've got to – well, just to let you know, a couple of folks have left. Jessica had to leave, Jessica Rivera. Xi Jinping also has left. We've got Jerome Bell, Wendy Arthur, Katie Caven, Brianna Cannon, and Jonathan Mosley. So this is our panel. And so I want to kind of open up – and I want to sit back and let you guys talk to each other. We've got reporters here who have never talked to each other. We've got a pretty incredible crew here. And so feel free to address each other, ask questions, talk about your different reports, talk about we're going to get into some of the bills that we have here. And when Jerome runs for Congress next time, we'll say, hey, guess what we got? So let's take about 4 minutes and mute yourselves if you want to make some noise. And then I'm just going to open it up to everybody and see what you all think of the state of our liberty, or as I say, the lack thereof. And we'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. All right, so the scheduled part of the show is over, and we got a free-for-all. We got two more hours, so whatever you guys want to do is fine with me. I just want to start with Jerome because he hasn't been on for a little bit, and just to continue the comments and anything you folks want to talk about. Again, ask each other questions. Actually, it looks like Katie's left us too, so we got Jerome, Wendy, Brianna, and Jonathan. So feel free. Where do we stand? Where's our liberty? What's going on? Free-for-all. Go for
it. You know, I believe, I believe where we are right now, and thanks to Jonathan, too, you know, for those comments, because he's definitely right about the puppet that was installed other than me. You know, when you get $7 million spent on you by both parties and combined to keep you out, to get one of their puppets to get there, then, you know, there's probably a big issue with that. And, you know, like you said, you haven't heard from her. You know, she's been, like I told everybody, she would be just a McCarthy puppet. She's just a vote for whatever McCarthy wants to do. And so in that aspect, that's tyranny as well. You know, when I was running, you know, the Democrats were running ads saying that if I won, Trump wins. You know, so they were tying us at, they were tying me and Trump at the hip in 2022 because they really anticipate Trump to be back in 2024. And so, you know, they couldn't allow that to happen. And, you know, but right now I think we are on the precipice and we are in a fight for this country to keep communism out of the country. You know, on my show a couple of weeks ago, I read the 45 communist elements that they read into the congressional record in 1963, and probably half of those have been completed already, and they're working on the other half, or even more than half. So, you know, I believe we're definitely in a fight for this country, you know, not only from tyranny from our own government, but from the communist element inside of our own government and the communism that's trying to take over this country. I believe that's where we are right now.
Yeah. I'm getting a little feedback on one of your lines, so make sure that if you've got your computer on, your phone's not picking it up, we're not getting a little crossover there. Anybody else? Just like I say, feel free to talk to each other, ask each other questions. I'm just going to kind of hang back here.
Well, I'd like to weigh in on a couple things. Jonathan was saying that, you know, he doesn't believe that people have really tried to work things out. Well, the reason for that is because there is one party who refuses to work with anybody on anything, and then you have half of the other party who are in the other party's pocket. So nothing is going to be worked out in this because it's just going to continue. And a very wise man, John Kilpatrick, once said, "You deserve what you tolerate." I think it's time for us to quit tolerating crap. Yeah. It's time to quit tolerating that one party has the final say-so over everything just because they say so and the rest of us bow down. No, I'm sorry, but, you know, bite me. That's not going to happen on my watch. And it's time for us to stand up and say, no, this is a tyrannical government. This is not what God instituted. It is not what God meant for us to happen. And we have dropped the ball as people, as a country, letting this happen because everybody's told, well, you're just one person. And Action Radio has constantly said, yeah, well, it starts with one person, just like that illustration that we talked about this morning.
We're all just one person.
So
I'm one person, you're one person, but you come together and all stuff happens.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. So when are we going to start uniting as the United States of America and say we're not going to tolerate evil and wickedness and tyranny anymore? When are we going to do that? Because now is the time. If we don't do it now, then we are doomed.
Yeah, I agree. Pianchi, I hope, calls in, made a comment. He says, God gave us liberties. This is on live chat for those. Anybody that wants to type in live chat from around the world, just get a free account and join us. He says, God gave us liberties. He worked through the hearts and minds of great men to put his gift into words. Clearly put, evil men have given us lies, deceit, confusion, and division. Evil men have given us tyranny, fear, hate, and shame. Evil men attack our family structure and attempt to steal from us our bright future and hope and that of our children. And of late, evil men have given us death in the form of runaway government and bureaucrats. And of late, COVID-19. God, please bless America the beautiful. And that's from Pianki. Pianki, call in. We need you here. We've only got three of us now. We've got Jerome, Wendy, and Jonathan. Everybody, so, I guess that barbecue just keeps calling. There they go. They leave us. Would you believe that first hour? That was basically, we've just done the first hour. That's one of the most intense first hours I think we've ever had. Especially with, what did you think of Xi Fan Fleet calling us, you know, from D.C.? That's her first time on the show. She only learned about us a week ago. She grew up under Mao. The Cultural Revolution in Mao's China escaped from that. Now she's here in D.C. I didn't talk to her further. Let's see if she wants to be a lobbyist for us and you know, walk into Congress. I think that would be great fun. I'll talk to her about that in a little bit. But
she'd be great.
And then, of course, yeah, exactly. Well, she's in D.C. And Brianna had to leave us too. But have you guys had a chance to listen to Brianna before? She really is incredible. She's 16 years old.
I think she has a very bright future.
She's incredible. She's incredible. Yeah. I've heard her one time before, and I'm just astonished that she's only 16. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And the lady that was served under Mao. I mean, it takes people and immigrants like that to really bring home to people that don't understand what we have here in this country and where we can slip into, you know, to put, you know, that perspective on they lived under and what they see happening here. You know, I think she needs a louder voice. People like her need a louder voice because they understand more than, you know, most Americans do, you know, what's slipping away from us.
Well, I'm an immigrant.
Josie's
an immigrant. A lot of the folks on this show are immigrants simply because we do know what it's like. And even though I grew up in Canada and Australia, you know, not what I call tyrannies, well, until recently, they're still different. There's a different feeling in those countries. They are definitely a hierarchical, you know, prime minister, monarchy, parliamentary system, and they're different. It's not quite the same thing. Jonathan, do you want to get in this? I'm hearing background.
Well, why don't you... let me just say that I'm still watching the TV here in D.C. and they're talking about the crowds and, you know, there's nothing about the reason for the 4th of July. Remember that the fight, you know, don't drive, take this metro when you come into town. And remember that I know fireworks.
What, the fireworks? What's happening in D.C. today?
Oh, yeah, they always have. I mean, traditionally, remember January 6th at the the Capitol, where
right.
You
were there.
Summer.
You were there.
Well, I was there as a reporter. I didn't go into the building or anything like that.
Right.
But my video is up there where it shows me walking all the way from the Supreme Court, and there's no barrier, there's no sign, there's nothing. During the summer, there are the National Symphony Orchestra has concerts on the Capitol grounds where they're trying to prosecute people. So anyway, the Washington Mall is, of course, usually jammed with, you know, probably a million people, July 4th, January, New Year's, something like that. And I haven't normally come down here because it's so hard to get in and out, but they'll have fireworks. They'll have people partying, being all over the Washington Mall, which of course is a park area called the Mall. So nobody, of course, is paying any attention to what July 4th is about. I know that celebration, you know, fireworks have always been a sign of celebration, but they are in a very real sense reminiscent of, you know, artillery. You know, as you watch fireworks, remember that this was, you know, that we took our independence by force,
right,
and by force of arms. And again, just, you know, we waited, you know, maybe I shouldn't say it because I'm not sure, but mostly we wait, you know, it was when we were attacked that we fought back. But the other thing I'll just squeeze in here is that, you know, helping with these January 6th things, and again, forget about January 6th for a moment, and just about the attitude of the government and the Uniparty and everything like that, is that throughout these prosecutions, references to 1776 are being used by, you know, the Biden Department of Justice and the FBI and, you know, the prosecutors as evidence of an insurrection. So when they hear, you know, when they have social media of people saying that they talked about 1776 or, you know, which is the 4th of July we're celebrating today, they use that as evidence of a, you know, of an insurrection to overthrow the United States. Mm-hmm. And
why would they feel that way? Because maybe because they become George III, maybe because they become a corrupt government that considers itself all powerful. Maybe the similarities are so great to Great Britain of the 1770s that maybe they are identifying with them and feeling a little bit like, well, gee, maybe the peasants are revolting. You know, how dare they?
That's probably how they feel.
Yeah.
If the government is telling us who they are, maybe we should listen to them.
Yeah. Well, here's the fascinating thing we've never talked about, the fact that the tyrants always brag. They always brag about what they do. They always tell you what they're going to do because they're so pleased with themselves. There's some kind of arrogance and disconnect that they think either it doesn't matter or they're talking to their friends or maybe they think that us peons out here really want to be ruled by them. And so they'll tell you, you know, why are they broadcasting Agenda 2030? Why are they telling us about the whole climate change agenda? Why aren't they just doing it? But they tell us everything, 15-minute cities. All the tyrannies that they have planned for us are clearly outlined. COVID, Event 201, I didn't know what it was at the time. I didn't really hear about it until after things started. But it's all there. They're really happy to tell you how they're going to take your rights away. I mean, who knows? Who doesn't know that they want us to eat bugs, you know, and not have any property and be happy? Everybody knows that. We know what they're going to do. We just have to stop them. That's all. Gentlemen? It's just Jerome and Johnson. You two are it, right? Everybody else.
No, I agree. Let me just say that the lady,
Jerome?
Of course, Jerome Bell is an example of someone who has fought back in a, you know, in the political system, who has put his name on the ballot, put his name out very loudly and things like that. But someone was saying that, was reacting to my comment about people who've, you know, whether we've fought back. And I, you know, I don't mean that there aren't people who have done what they can do. As I've said before on this show, what I mean is that we have a large and growing movement of people who actually start to care for the first time in my lifetime. But we have not learned the tools of it's like sending a bunch of farmers out against the British redcoats. You know, without them learning how to prevail. And when it comes to elections, when it comes to fighting back, we have not, you know, we have people who have gone from total apathy, watching nothing but sports, and sports is fine, but I'm talking about an obsession, you know, and who, you know, who just go about their lives, and then suddenly they wake up and they can't fix it in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So they think, oh, well, it can't be fixed.
Well, let me talk about that for a second, because this is a really important point. I want Jerome's insight on this as well. We've created a system here that allows anybody to write a law, that allows that law to be distributed worldwide on the Internet, that allows anybody to copy the bill link or the links to our shows and send them anywhere at no cost. They've already got the computers. They've already got the Internet. There are no meetings at Action Radio. There are no protests at Action Radio. I mean, people are free to do it. We don't care. But we don't organize anything like that. So the sum total of involvement for 99% of people that even know about us is literally to copy links to bills and copy links to shows, share them with friends, and the bills especially, share them with media and government. It could not be simpler. And yet, this hasn't caught on. Now, I know there's massive censorship. I know there are problems. But it's like they just, either they don't believe that it's that simple. There's some kind of disconnect. Or they don't want they don't want their freedom, which is a really scary thought. I've talked to many talk show hosts who have had me on. And they say, yeah, we'll get our audience coordinated. We'll help write bills. This is fun. I really like this. And then by the end of the hour, they're like, well, I got my ratings. I'm good. I'll just get my advertising money and go home. I said, well, you hypocrites. You totally rejected everything we talked about, which has happened with literally all of them. Not a single media person has gotten back to me and said, yeah, I want to report on this. I want to talk about this. I want to, or a talk show host. Yeah, I'd like to coordinate my audience. There's a disconnect. I don't know how much simpler we could make it. Have we made it too simple? Maybe we should have meetings and rest. I don't know. But whatever it is, the bills are right there. The bills to people's freedom are right there. They are ready for committee hearing. They are ready for a vote. They are ready for action. All people have to do is copy the links to the bills and send them to media and government. Copy the links to the shows and send those everywhere. And that's it. enough people do that, we got our liberty back. I mean, it's literally that simple. Is that simple a concept or what?
I don't want to cut off Jerome, who's actually put his name on the ballot and gone out there and let him do it. But
with our bills, by the way.
But practically everything, I mean, there is a disconnect that people want to, you know, people want to just sit back and watch. And I fought with people. And, like, I was going to try to help Jerome Bell more. And then I got sucked into defending January 6th people. And it was, like, just all-consuming. It was ridiculous. The amount of work, and I apologize. I wish I could have done more.
Yeah, but you're in the arena. You're acting. You're taking part. You're fine. You're not just wishing.
Right. So you know, I get in these arguments with people, and everybody wants to, like, for example, they think that you know, attorneys are getting rich or something somehow helping. I mean, how do you get rich off of people who have no money? You know, most of these attorneys are like doing, you know, minimum wage at best, in addition to kinds of expenses and things. And they all want to argue. I mean, it seems to me they all want to argue about the futility of doing something so they don't actually have to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's this tremendous attitude of like, well, if I got off my couch, if I turned off my TV, it wouldn't work anyway, so, you know, where's the reruns of Laverne and Shirley? I don't know. It's just I don't get it.
I don't, so I'm asking the question. Jerome? What reaction did you get to our legislation, just out of curiosity?
Oh, I loved it. You know, that's why I ran with it. That's why I made it part of my campaign
Did people believe they could have vaccine product liability when we made it as simple as we did?
The problem is that, you know, I think there's a disconnect because, people are brainwashed. You know, people are suffering badly from Stockholm syndrome with our government, and they believe if it's not coming from our government or from our news sources or from Fox News or whatever they watch, Newsmax or whatever, if one of those guys aren't saying it and running with it, then it's not valid. And so they don't believe in it, you know? And so, it was just like when I first ran in 2020, when I ran on the immigration moratorium and when I ran on, you know, things of that nature, you know, it didn't really catch on because not enough people really, really, I guess, wanted to run with it because it wasn't a popular thing. It wasn't, you know, Steve Bannon wasn't saying it. You know, I was saying all of these things, you know, in 2020
that
you're
a racist,
these people
Jerome.
Talk about now, you know, you know, on these shows, you know. So, I mean,
I was just joking with you.
I was a racist. I was a bigot, you know, and everything like that, you know. So, I mean, and then I got censored from it, you know, and that's why, you know, Jonathan helped me out. You know, Jonathan was one of the only attorneys that helped me out. You know, we filed a lawsuit against Facebook, you know, for the censorship that they were, you know, doing to me, you know, the election tampering that they did, the election tampering that Twitter did. We never got around to, you know, handling Twitter because J6 happened, you know. But I appreciate Jonathan a lot because he truly was the only one, you know, that put his name out there with me, you know, to do that. And, you know, Facebook is powerful. You know, they got the jurisdiction changed to California, and none of these California attorneys would touch Silicon Valley guy. You know, I mean, I even contacted Harmeet Dhillon, and she didn't even want to do it, you know. But, I think there's a total disconnect.
Has she been on your
Harmeet
show?
Harmeet Dhillon?
Yeah.
No, she won't come on my show. She'll have to answer too many hard questions about, you know, why she's helping out Kevin McCarthy right now and you know, why she's, you know, dealing with a bunch of the donors, you know, out there trying to destroy President Trump at the moment. So she don't want to come on my show. You know, my show gets – and, you know, I ask hard-hitting questions.
I've been on your
show.
I
know. You got to come back, too. We got to have you back soon, matter of fact.
Hey, a morning show, you do an evening show. It's actually easy. It's kind of funny, though.
Yeah. You know, 8 p.m. Eastern, man, we just kick back.
Okay, yeah, and plug your show as much as you want. You know, you're my guest, so feel free. That's not a problem here. So we're a team. We're not competitors. Specifically, which bills did you – I've got Pianca on. I'll bring him on in just a second. Which bills were the ones that you were able to get up the most? And just I'm just curious the reaction from anybody, either the Republican Party itself Army Dillon, just people you talk to, you know, when you're out there shaking hands, kissing babies, and whatever else you have to do to run for office. I can never do it. I can never run for office. I just, no. I don't even like the process.
I was able to get those three. Yeah, I was able to get those three up, you know, and I talked to people like, you know, Bob Good, and I talked to, you know, just people in general, and they liked them in general, you know, but, as far as, you know, when we're talking about them, they liked them in general, you know, yeah. But, you know, as far as people in general, they like the idea, they like the concept, you know, but like I said, people just don't believe that citizens, you know, the peons down here, you know, the peasants can actually, you know, take legislation or push legislation up through our legislators because, you know, they don't think anything is going to happen, you know, and that's the bad thing about it, you know.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right.
They don't trust that, you know, they don't trust our representatives, you know, that they would do anything. And our representatives are making it true that they won't do anything for us because they don't really represent us, you know, and that's the deal. You know, they don't really represent us at all. So, you know, it's tough for the people to go, you know, with something that they believe that they think is going to fail, but they won't even try to put it out there to see if we can push it through, you know, because people are and I think Jonathan, hit on it. If it doesn't happen in 5 minutes, then okay, it's no good, you know. So.
No, I'm afraid you're right that because it is so simple, and I made it simple on purpose, you know, and our vaccine bill is even simpler since I took out the part about removing the declaration of emergency because Brandon actually did that already, so I don't need that part of the bill anymore. So these bills are still edited, they're still worked on, they're still current. Every time you click on a bill, because they're all electronic, there's no paper involved, everybody gets the latest version of it. But I wonder if it is too simple. These people, we just need... Here's what we need, like Carlson or Rogan or somebody huge to have you know, probably me on, or we need some pretty amazing event to take place here. And I got a couple in the works, actually, that if we can get those and get before the public in a large way, and I can tell folks it is as simple. It's as simple, you know, this is the beauty of it. We don't need lawyers. We don't need, you know, 5,000 pages of code, you know, improvement when I can do it in like 3 sentences. Most of our bills are amazingly short. Anyway, Pianki.
That's how the bills are supposed to work anyway.
Go ahead, you know? John.
That's how the bills are supposed to work anyway, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, our legislatures, you know, they fill these bills with so much garbage and you know, so much pork and just so much BS where, you know, you don't know if you are supposed to vote yes on the bill or no on the bill. You know, because if you vote yes on the bill, there's stuff in there you don't agree with, but you want this thing, you know, so they make it so convoluted, and they do that by design to make sure that they still get what they want, even mm-hmm. though they may give up, you know, a compromise or a concession, but they're still getting what they want because, you know, they pack the bills. And that's one thing that we really need to get away from, and that's one thing that the people need to try to force the legislature to do is, like, you know, it's one-item bills. It's just one-item bill, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't throw anything else in the bill, and that's the way it's supposed to be. But, like, and you know, again, it's been going on for so long, people actually believe that that's the way it's supposed to work, or you know, that's the way it's supposed to be, and, you know, it's really not. And, you know, like I say, the people, because we don't teach civics anymore in school, people don't, you know, they don't even read the Constitution. The people really, I believe, don't even understand how government is supposed to work anymore, because it's been so convoluted, and it's been, you know, taken out of the mainstream, you know, so much. I mean, we used to have cartoons that tell us, you know, how a bill is supposed to work. You know, that little thing about, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill, you know, the Schoolhouse Rock, right? You know, that used to come out. You know,
oh, yeah, I remember that.
How things are supposed to work, you know? So, I mean, you know, people are just been so dumbfounded and it's been so dumbed down, you know, where, you know, people don't even know how their own government is supposed to work.
It's almost like they've been so far away from freedom, they've forgotten what freedom actually looks like, which is another scary thought. Pianki, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Greg, and to you guests. Sorry for
we got Jonathan and Jerome Bell. So there's just
Jonathan,
two of us left now. Yeah.
I was having cold pizza for breakfast. That's good.
Okay. I'm partial to myself.
To Jerome, the dumb people that you have today was your kids that you never educated. That's where the problem has to go back to the root. You're not educating children on the founding of this country. the founding documents in particular, then go into the viewing and documentary on the wars and the men who fought them, those great generals, those soldiers, then they would end up being dumb and acting out like AOC when she made the remark that Congress needs to reel in the Supreme Court. Where did she get that thinking from? And worse off, the people that voted for her. What does that say about them?
Jerome, something tells me you did your kids. I'm just guessing. Jerome was a Navy.
I mean, my kids are very educated on everything in the
American.
You know, my kids are. You know, I don't know about other people's kids, but my kids are definitely educated on the way the government works, and they understand the Declaration and they know what's in the Constitution. You know, because I instill that into them. You know, as a young age. You know, I have some very very intelligent kids. My oldest is a valedictorian, was a valedictorian. Now he's a medical doctor, but he still preaches medical freedom. He still bucks the system, you know, like I taught him to do very well. You know, so my kids are very knowledgeable of what we speak about. You know, that's why, you know, when I ran for Congress, they were able to go out there and campaign for me and you know, and speak the things that I would, you know, that I taught them about the Constitution, about being free, you know, with no reservations, no matter what their friends may have said or no matter what they may have been challenged with, I guess, you know, from the public, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I don't worry about my kids. I worry about other people's kids, you know, because I see them as adults and I see how they act and I see how, you know, what they don't represent and I see how they speak. So now I worry about their kids, but my kids are definitely not a worry, trust me.
Yeah. Well, I wish we had more kids like Brianna. You know, if we had more Brianna Cannons, we'd be in a lot better shape. Anyway, go ahead, Pianki.
That's an excellent response. You know, my kids are the same. But my kids get lonely because they're usually the only one amongst their peers. And the conversation goes to Stephen Smith, LeBron James, rather than the actions that's going on that they see and are affected by in our government by its bureaucrats. So that is something that has to be mandatory, American history back in the schools, so we can create the army of liberty like it's supposed to be. And that has to be reinstituted and reintroduced. It's going to take time. Nothing's going to happen overnight. Where we are today did not occur overnight. The destruction of the fabric of the United States has been going on for quite some time. If I can recollect, you've seen it when it was beginning and happening, but you didn't pay any attention to it. Now it's mostly recollections of what we saw.
Yeah, I don't want freedom to be just a memory. Jonathan, you want to get into this? We're a change agency here. We just have to have people. I think Jerome, you know, really said it. That people, they don't believe it's that simple. They don't see that they can have that kind of power. And everybody, as Wendy says, you know, people say, well, I'm just one person. Well, I got news for you. I'm just one person too. So is Jerome. So is Pianki. So is Jonathan. We're all just one person. But you have enough of us one person acting, and amazing things can happen. Anyway, Jonathan, I'm going to
agree. I believe what we
around.
Need.
Yeah. Go ahead. Hey, Jerome.
Yeah, I believe what we need here in the United States, we need our own re-education camps. You know, like you say, we need to bring back, civics in the school. We need to bring back, you know, reading the Constitution. We need to bring all that back. So, you know, we need an American, re-education camps, you know, to teach people what this country is really about.
We already have disinformation camps known as the public schools. We have an indoctrination system, right, you know, that goes back to Prussia in the 1800s, you know, to create cogs in the wheel, to create obedient servants of government. You know, so why would we need re-education when, you know, what we really need to do is get rid of the government education and just have a normal education? Like I say, Brianna is like the example. You know, she, you know, part homeschool, part, you know, regular school, part online school, a bunch of other things, but she's got really good parents. And she went to Patriot Academy, which teaches all kinds of kids across the country, you know, what the meaning of this country is. I'm hoping to turn them all into lobbyists when they graduate. Still working on that. You know, there's a certain percentage of the kids out there that really know what's going on. The problem is there aren't enough of them. We have to take people coming out of government schools and turn them back into Americans from the communists they graduate as. That's the problem. or one of them. Anybody?
Yeah, yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, well, you know, I ran on abolishing the federal, you know, education system. So, you know, the government, the Department of Education. So I ran on that. So, you know, I'm all a proponent of doing that, you know, getting rid of the government schools and teaching these kids what they definitely need to teach. So I can say history, American history, right, and, you know, back about America. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, what we do have, and like I touched on it before, we're in a battle, you know, against communism, because communists have, and we have communists sitting right, you know, in our justice system, in our Congress, both the House and the Senate, up as far as the president, as far as I'm concerned.
It used to be a bad thing to have communists everywhere. Well, let me ask you, actually, I got a couple questions for you. When you ran for office, and it was one of the Virginia districts, you can tell me which one, and the Republican, you know, handlers came up to talk to you, how did they tell you what they wanted? How subtle were they? How did they try and, you know, direct money to your campaign based on your obedience to the, you know, the GOP masters? How did they actually talk to you behind the scenes that you can reveal?
Well, it was District 2, and I'll be honest, from the onset when I ran in 2020 for the first time, you know, nobody took me serious. Nobody, you know, thought that I would come out with 22% of the vote in a first-time run on a COVID year. So they never really approached me. They never really thought, you know, well, he's just a guy, you know. And then and when I ran in 2022, they all knew my plan. You know, they all knew what I stood for, and I came out with the same plan. I came out with the same campaign. I'm America first, you know. But here's my campaign pledges. I'm still running on an immigration moratorium, and I'm running on medical freedom. So they knew where I stood. So the only real, I guess, approach that I received from someone is that he said, hey, man, we need to get you on Win Red. Right, you know,
what does
that's
that
the
mean?
Thing. Like, hey,
red is communism. Hey, what do you mean, Win Red?
Well, you know, Win Red. You know how they do. You know, with the money, that's where they, you know, shuffle the money. They shuffle the money, you know, through Win Red. They money launder the money to the candidates that they want in Win Red. You know, and then someone told me if you know, if you would have supported McCarthy, you would have won in a landslide. So, you know. It, you know, there's people out there, they know that I was the best candidate, but since I didn't support, you know, who they wanted for speaker, I didn't support their agenda, you know, then all the money, all the ads and everything was directed against me, Democrat and Republican, you know, and Republican ads. The Democrats ran all the ads and the Republicans spent a lot of the money against me, you know, so, you know, they never
Isn't
really approached me from the
when,
back.
When you say
so
that
I was ad- told.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about you were the Republican. You're talking about I guess that was the primary. So, but the Republicans were their PACs too, right? Republican, you know, fake Republican PACs, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like Kevin McCarthy's PAC, the Congressional Leadership Fund that was taking, you know, money from Sam Bankman-Fried, FTX funds. I mean, he dumped $450,000, you know, against me into my campaign for my opponent in one day, you know, because I was killing her on fundraising. She wasn't fundraising. And so once he dumped that money in there, you know, then others thought, okay, well, you know, just like the fish there, they, oh, shit, well, you know, she must be the best candidate. And then all of his friends started to dump money. Yes, Steve Scalise, you had Elise Stefanik, you had all of the rhinos, you know, Tim Scott, you had all the rhinos started dumping money, you know, into her campaign, you know, in between her, but you know, I actually my small dollar donations, you know, were much larger than her or Luria or the Democrat. You know, my small dollar donations was like $360,000. So, you know, I outraised them probably, you know, 20 to 1 on small dollar donations, but, you know, they had the lobbyist money, they had the big dollar donors, you know, things like that, you know, where the money is to, you know, so, okay, so, you know, she's bought and paid for, you know, I get that. So basically that's what happened, you know. I mean, and then people just bought off on it. Then, of course, 8,000 Democrats came over and voted into my primary, you know, so it was a major operation, there. But I mean, I have one person tell me this basically the same thing. You know, they're going to come and put their arm around your shoulder, and they're going to tell you, okay, well, we'll support you if you do this, you know. Mm-hmm. I never really got that because I think I was so firm on where I stood, you know, because I did it for two elections. I was so firm. It was like, okay, well, this guy, and I made it clear, I can't be bought, you know, I can't be paid for. I'm not going to be anybody's prostitute or prostitute, you know. So they really never approached me. But what they did, they ran three horses, you know, they put in, you know, three other horses against me in my primary to make sure, you know, that either I was going to lose some votes, I was going to get votes stolen, that, you know, one way or another, I wasn't going to beat their candidate, you know, so that's what they did, but yeah.
I'm laughing because it's not like anybody would have any doubt about what Jerome Bell stands for.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I'm not really sure what, you know, tell us what you really feel. you know, there's nobody who would be more outspoken than Jerome.
So we should document this. It'd be great to have a special on the real GOP or who these people really are, because I don't think a lot of the you know regular Republican membership, they know what's happening to Trump because they see it every day, but I don't think they realize that this is happening to every candidate who sort of goes against the elitist establishment privileged party line. You know, the greatest danger to this country, I believe, is the Democrat Party. The second greatest danger is the Republican Party. And well, there's a reason I call the GOP the gelding old party. They are absolutely useless and worthless and in many ways dangerous. Who wants to know that?
No, I agree. And see, the thing is that this has been going on for a long time, and as I'm sure either one of us could say, it's like every time they do this, and, you know, for Mitch McConnell, it goes back like 15, 20 years against, oh, who was the guy in, you know, I forget the name, running for Senate down south, is that they always portray it as like, oh, I support all Republicans, just not this one. And then it's the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one. So like when they're talking about Trump, you know, he's just the latest in a long line of troublemakers who these people, you know, attack. And so they claim it's like, oh, you know, we need to – it's just he has flaws. No, all conservatives have flaws to these people. There's no one who isn't flawed in their eyes unless they, you know, unless they're part of the swamp. And they'll tell us, you know, that, of course – and the Virginia Republican Party is one of the worst. They'll say that – you know, they say that, well, we need to pick better candidates. But they don't know. But their candidates are terrible. You know, they say, well, you need to listen to us who our candidates should be.
Well, that's one of the biggest problems. You're right on. Why is it that all our candidates come from the two parties? The choices for they make the choice for us who we can vote for by deciding which candidates they'll put up. That's insane, Jonathan.
Well, it's not just the two parties. Remember, as I say, there's two Republican parties. And there have been since the Civil War of starting with 1964, if not earlier.
Okay.
You know, there's the Swamp Party, the Rockefeller Republicans, and the Conservatives. So when people say, well, the Republicans do this, and I say, well, which Republican? And so, you know, so it's when we talk about the, you know, what's wrong with the Republicans, it's the swamp that people are actually thinking about. The thing is they have no idea how to win an election. So they say, well, this, you know, Jerome couldn't win the general election. Well, you know, the people saying that, you know, don't have the foggiest idea of what it takes to win an election. They just believe all these phony assumptions that, you know, that we need to appease the Democrats. It's like, you know, like really. So a Democrat is going to vote for a Republican if he's just that's not going to happen. You know, there's no Republican that the average Democrat is going to come over and vote for unless it's because the Republican is different from the Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, playing pretend, you know, like mimicking the Democrats is not going to motivate anybody to come over. And now this is July 4th, and like, let me, you know, bring it in because, in my view, again, that, you know, people are ready to go for guns, and they've never really tried. They don't really know how to fight this, these battles.
We do.
So I think
we don't know exactly how to fight
them. And I'd be interested to hear from Jerome. How many people, when he finally got people to come out and be interested in his candidacy, what did he feel about their knowledge of how to run a campaign, how to run or participate in a campaign? Because I think that we have a huge volunteer army that doesn't know which end of the rifle, the bullet comes out of politically.
You know, yeah, that's true. There is a lot of naivety or ignorance when it comes to really knowing how a campaign works and the machine that it has to be, because it's definitely a machine. And for someone like myself, who's a grassroots candidate, who don't have the millions of dollars to go out and pay door knockers or to pay, for text or to, put all this money up for ads and TV, and stuff like that, it definitely has to take a ground army to get it done. And a lot of people, just think that, okay, you're out there running and you put your name out there, but, okay, that's all it takes. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of volunteers. It takes, some paid staff, and people don't realize that. They'll come out to the meet and greets, but they won't leave a donation. Stuff like that. Okay, you're my guy, and I'm going to vote for you. Okay, well, unfortunately, I love your vote, your one vote, but, I need to pay for a TV commercial. Can you help a brother out, they don't really understand, the process. They don't understand, getting on committees. They don't understand how we can actually take this country back, but they have to participate. And a lot of people, they participate sometimes at the ballot box, but they need to participate in the whole process. And once, people understand that they have to be part of the whole process, I think things get better, especially when you're up against money. When you have a candidate that's up against a lot of money, because, money buys TV, and, they use that to brand their candidate and to, brainwash again, the people to, make them believe that this person is the best, candidate because they're on TV, because they have this money, and people still buy into that, and what I saw in my campaign was that, if I can say this on air,
yes,
people are
okay, of course you can.
People are weak. People are weak asses. Here's what I mean by that. Okay, in my campaign, it was myself. It was their candidate, and then there was another candidate that was running. It was actually two more, but one, that they put into the campaign to mimic my campaign, to basically say everything I was saying, but being a nicer guy, right? Because I'm brash. I'm a radical Republican. That's why I named my show The Radical Republicans. I'm a Thaddeus Stevens. I'm a Frederick Douglass type guy, right? So I'm not gonna pull any punches. I'm not gonna sugarcoat shit, for you just because you think, oh my God, he said shit. And it sort of hurts your ears. Well, I'm going to go with this guy because he doesn't curse or he doesn't say things the harsh way. I definitely don't like her. I really like you, but this guy is safer. He's safer. And then, you waste your vote, and it is a wasted vote on that, because no way in hell that guy can beat me. So he can't beat her. So why would you go with that guy? Because he's a nicer me. So that's what people are. People have to stop being candy asses, man. People have to stop, thinking things are nice. Do they think when China come across this border that they're going to be nice, to them, or if Russia comes and attacks or whoever? People are weak, and that's one of the main things. They say, well, we have to vote for the moderate because, if we have a hardliner or if we have an extreme, like they said, I can't win because I'm not moderate enough. Okay, well, if I can't win because I'm not moderate enough, why is the majority, the majority Patriot Party, or the majority, the Patriot Majority Party, spending $303,000 on me, on ads, because they're not spending any money on her, they're not spending any money on you, you know, but I can't win, but they're spending all the money on me. Shouldn't that tell you a little something who they're worried about? You know, shouldn't that tell you that if they're spending, you know, just one Democrat group, if the Democrat Party of Virginia is spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for TV ads to tie me to Donald Trump, for print ads and mailers to tie me to Donald Trump, who do they fear? They fear two people, me and Donald Trump. They don't fear anybody else, right? You know, because
they
know.
You think they're telling you it'll be a good thing.
yeah, exactly. You know, because they know if the liberal wins, the Democrat wins, they're still good. She's the incumbent. If the moderate wins, okay, they still got a Democrat, because a moderate Republican is nothing but a Democrat. We still got the puppet. She's going to vote the same way that we do anyway. So, okay, so it really doesn't matter, you know, who wins here, as long as this guy don't win, because if this guy wins, shit's going to change and we're going to have some issues. So we got to spend all our money on this guy, you know, so...
Oh,
you know, that's the thing.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
It's a shame that you have to spend so much time and money on teaching people the nuts and bolts rather than people hearing your issues and platform. And you never will be able to outspend them when it comes down to glamour and glory and frills. You won't be able to do it. And it's not your fault. It's the mechanisms that's not in place that put in front of you an audience that knows what they should know rather than coming to you to learn. That there is a hard part that's down there insurmountable for people of conservative voices. It's always a teaching moment rather than an informational moment. I went to Trump rallies. And I listened to what his platform was, what he was proposing. And never have I heard a presidential candidate talk about school choice and vouchers, which when polled, the majority of the people that's in that dire state, that's what they want. I mean, it's just like that.
Hmm. Let me, I want to change the subject a little bit because the benefit of having Jerome here. How long were you in the Navy? Was it 20 years, 30 years? How long did you serve?
27 years.
Yeah. So in all that time, did you ever expect that what you were fighting against, you know, around the world with the Navy would end up here in our own country? A coup d'etat, a stolen government, an act of treason that is amazingly well tolerated by both parties because nobody has seemed to stand up and actually do anything against it as compared to our founders. Most of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence died within a few months. They were killed, tortured, captured. They lost everything. Their houses burned out. Their family was killed or in prison. They sacrificed everything. But not a single person in Congress is willing to sacrifice anything to remove a coup, an illegal government, a traitorous government that is ordering, you know, soldiers around the world, that is changing our energy policy, our foreign policy, our monetary policy, that is bringing us inflation and regulations that they can't do. I've got a list. I'll pull up a list of it in a minute. It's back on my screen. But did you ever think in all that time all the things you're fighting against would actually end back here in this country? And as a veteran that served this country so well, where does that put you and the other veterans now?
Well, no. Simple answer to that first question. I never thought that it would come back here, because that's why I spent 27 years doing it. You know, and a bunch of my speeches on the campaign trail, you know, I said that I didn't serve 27 years or nearly three decades of my life just to turn this country over to a bunch of God-hating communists, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I still believe that, you know, and I tell people to this day, when I signed my oath in 1985, when I said my first oath in 1985, you know, I meant that and I lived that to today. And my oath never expires, even though I'm a veteran and I'm actually on the retired rolls now. Mm-hmm. It can't be recalled. But if there's a call to duty,
oh, come on,
then I'm definitely going to do it.
Back
you
out.
Know, so I mean,
back up the duffel bag. We still need you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, and that's why I ran for Congress. Mm-hmm. That's one reason I ran for Congress, because, you know, I wanted to continue to live and pledge my oath, you know, to this country, you know, because the country has given me so much. And touring and I've been all over the world. I've been on every continent. I've been in every probably major city, major country, you know, including Moscow, you know, and, you know, Russia, whatever, you know. And, mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, what I find is that this is undoubtedly the best country and the number one country in the world. And, you know, I don't believe enough people, unfortunately, is just complacent of that fact.
Let's get specific. You know? Where is it the best country? Is it the best country in the rural areas? Is it the best country? You know, look at the cities. There's some pretty horrible cities out there. We've got some pretty poor areas like Appalachia. I mean, where is it the best country in the world? It's certainly not in the Democrat-controlled cities. Where is it the best country in the world? Where's the best part of America?
I mean, even those cities, if you want to compare, you know, those cities to some of the shitholes in Karachi, Pakistan, or some of the places in Lima, Peru, or some of the places in Moscow, in Russia, okay, those places are still the best places in the world comparatively. You know, you want to go to Mogadishu, you want to go to Kenya, you want to go, you know, just name a place, down in Puerto Rico. I mean, you Haiti. I mean, you know, I've been to all these places where, you know, our worst shitholes are their best shitholes, okay? You know, if that makes sense. So we're still the best country.
Yeah.
So we're still the best country, you know, regardless, you know, of every other country, you know. And if people understood that and if people knew that, you know, I think they probably would, hopefully, I would say, would act a little better, you know, in their cities, would preserve their cities a little more. But, you know, like you say, it's all about money. It's all about, you know, the income for these Democrats, for the race baiters, for the legislative prostitutes that, you know, just prostitute themselves to the government, to the lobbyists, and to these, you know, these world, you know, I guess you can say these World Economic Forum, you know, elites, you know, the globalists. You know, one of the worst things that we ever could have did was go global, our trade, and, you know, with our manufacturing and things. That's the worst thing that this country ever could have did. Because we, you know, let other countries, you know, become number one, you know, in different areas, you know, where we were always number one, you know, in these areas. And with President Trump, we had brought back a lot of that. We became the number one oil producer, you know, an energy producer, you know, the world. You know, we need to get back to that. We just need to, you know, somehow, you know, get the idiots in this country back to, you know, believing, you know, that we are number one, and, you know, and to preserve what we have in this country, you know, before it's all lost. But, you know, a lot of people don't understand, you know, that there was a coup. You know, I was one of the first ones that came. I said, yeah, we underwent a coup November 8th in 2020, right? It was basically the same coup that they did, and yet it was less violent that they did in Ukraine in 2014, led by the same people. You know, we underwent a coup, and people like me and Jonathan and others that recognize this and that voice this, you know, when we talk about treason, how these people need to be punishable by death, we get canceled. You know, we get canceled off Twitter. You know, I put up a tweet on Twitter in reference to what happened in Maricopa County. You know, I said that all those accountable, you know, need to be arrested, need to be tried, you know, need to be basically fried for treason. You know, once convicted, you know, and Newsweek and everybody else ran with that and got me banned from Twitter for a year and a half. And, during my race again, you know, and, you know, election tampering again, you know, things like that. But, you know, when we come out and say that, we're the bad people, you know, oh, they're talking about killing people. We're talking about, you know,
well, you just gotta play the game. That's all. You know the game.
I recognize the game, so
that's why I don't talk about things. In fact, I had a doctor, one of our world's greatest doctors panel, brilliant man, did amazing things to help people with COVID, you know, in spite of the government trying to kill everybody. But he openly talked about violence on the show. I said, you can't do that. You know, it doesn't help. you know, so once you know what the media focuses in on, then you just don't be that person. So you can advocate, you know, Nuremberg trials, and you can advocate, you know, convictions, and let's get the full story out here, congressional hearings and legislation and the whole bit. But as soon as you mention, you know, the K word, you know, killing, everybody goes apoplectic and they get crazy and they just use it against you. That's the problem. You can believe it. You can say it on this show, but in general, playing the game is, you can still get your message out.
Yeah, you know, that method,
anyway. I want to study them. Go ahead, Bianchi.
That method that they use is silence. We have to use that same method by keeping their books out of the libraries and from in front of our kids. But we don't do that.
Here's a great question. How come the high school librarians aren't being arrested for distributing pornography? And the junior high librarians? That's what they're doing.
Well, they should be. I mean, they should be, but they're being protected.
Yeah.
You know, they're being protected by these woke attorney generals and these woke elected officials in these cities and these towns. And the sheriffs. And that was one thing I was going to say. Mm-hmm. The sheriffs aren't doing their constitutional duty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Bianchi and I talk about this all the time, that there is authority to fix everything we have here, but the people that should fix it aren't doing it. Jonathan and I talk about the courts that aren't acting the way they're supposed to, that they're mandated to. I spent 3 days on it. Talking about all this, you know, especially last Thursday, talking about the ways the Supreme Court has completely abdicated their duty in some areas and usurped authority they don't have in others. You know, this has been an ongoing thing. Although the court's done pretty well the last, you know, week or so, there's still some major, major problems. And the county sheriffs, the same thing. They could take all kinds of jurisdictions that they don't take. They're the constitutional officers. Why aren't they acting that way? Or the states could reject many of the things that are going on with the federal government. Say, look, you don't have any right to legislate in this area or regulate in this area or enforce anything in this area. You know, 10th Amendment, read it. If it ain't delegated to you,
That's
you
right.
can't do
yeah.
it. And that includes the FBI. We don't have a national police
FBI
force in the Constitution.
The FBI is supposed to check in with the sheriff. The sheriff's the one who has the territorial jurisdiction. FBI, IRS, not supposed to come knocking on your door.
Yeah, tell that to Waco.
Check in with
you
the sheriff.
Where was the county sheriff at Waco? You know, how come we didn't call all the other county sheriffs? Or the state didn't provide? What happened to the Texas National Guard? How was Waco allowed to happen in a free country? Gentlemen?
Well, you know, because it's all about funding. You know, once the federal government start funding these state programs and start funding the state, you know, it all goes back to this money. You know, they're scared that they're going to get their funding taken away. They're scared that they're going to lose this money. You know, and so they don't do their jobs. I mean, it's the same thing with the churches, with the 501(c)(3)s. I mean, same thing. You know, everybody's scared that they're going to lose money and lose funding if they don't, you know, perform, you know, how they're supposed to perform, you know, in accordance with their duties. You know, and these sheriffs, and you know, that's one of the things. I'm like, this illegal immigration stuff, you know, that's going on, this invasion that's going on in our country, should be stopped by the sheriffs. The sheriffs of these counties, the sheriffs of these, you know, states should be putting a stop to this. If the Border Patrol, because they're federal and they're not doing anything, and you know, these weak-ass governors, you know, hey, the sheriffs has the right and the duty to deputize anyone they want.
Okay.
They can deputize their own army and defend and defend the borders if they wanted to, you know. You know, I probably
sheriff
have 50,000 veterans that would go to the border right now, you know, if they felt that they wouldn't get arrested. You know, if these sheriffs deputized 50,000 veterans to go protect the border, I guarantee you there's 50,000 veterans that would go down there and defend this border and this invasion would stop.
That actually makes a lot of sense, and I've long felt that. And it was something you said earlier that I've heard from a lot of veterans, that once you take that oath to support and defend the Constitution, that isn't just the time you're in service. That's a lifetime commitment. I mean, I basically took the same oath myself, although not officially. So then we just need to coordinate the veterans. But you can't wait for the government to do it, because the government has a vested interest in illegals. You know, everything from supporting Social Security to getting votes to, the Republicans getting their Chamber of Commerce supporting industry with cheap labor to keep wages down for everybody else. There's a bunch of reasons why illegal aliens are here. People make fortunes off it. There are vast interests in doing so. But we, the people, you know, could do it. But again, everything all comes down to organization. You know, the Nazis were only 2% of Germany when they took over, but they were organized. You know, the federal government's not that big, but they're organized. you know, and they can bring about the military and the states, you know, still have a National Guard. They could, I would advocate that any of the, especially Florida, because we have a lot of our people up in the D.C. gulag being held as political prisoners. If I were governor of the state of Florida, I would take the National Guard to Washington, D.C. and break that place open and just free those people.
How many state Senate and House districts are within the congressional district that you was running for?
In my district, there's 11 congressional districts that, you know, that's in my state. And the state, the legislature, there's 100 delegates and 40 senators. So, you know, that's how that breaks down in Virginia and, you know, Senate, of course. You know,
no, in your congressional district. So how many state legislators and senators? How many state senators and
representatives within your congressional district that you was running for?
I'm sorry, you say state legislators and senators?
Yeah, you got to your state legislators divided up in state districts.
Yeah. In my district, in District 2, there was seven legislators and senators. It's like six and seven.
I asked you the question. Who do you have to answer to? This is where we get back to the idea that the states control the federal government. You have to answer to those people in those state representatives and Senate that make up your congressional district. They're the ones that's going to vote for you. And you made mention about federal funds. Where do federal funds come from? Well, they come from the states in one form or the other. So if you don't want the federal government to use those carrots and wave in front of you, don't give it to them.
Think you preached to the choir on that one. And, you know, you know,
I'm just waiting.
You know, honestly,
I hear silence. I get worried.
You know, I think you preached to the choir on that one. But, you know, yeah, I'm beholden to the people. You know, and, you know, those people are the ones that vote or not vote for me, you know, and vote for those state legislators. Now, if they put in the wrong state legislators, I can't do nothing about that. I have one vote, you know, for my state senator and my legislator, you know, my delegate. You know, there's one and one, you know, my little area where I live. If the state legislators, you know, those are the ones, like you said, are the ones that's, you know, really taking the carrots and, you know, things like that. And these other congressmen, you know, they take the carrots, you know, that's dangling in front of their faces. Because once we're congressmen, you know, and I've said this before, I not only represent my, you know, second district of Virginia, I represent the entire United States because I'm voting on laws, I'm voting on legislation that affect the United States as a whole, not just my district. Yes, I represent my district and I'm beholden to my district and I'm supposed to vote the values and principles of my district, you know, first and foremost, you know, but I still am a representative of the entire United States government because my yes or no vote affects the entire country.
You represent those state voices. Those state voices got the power to call you back to the carpet and tell you and read you the Riot Act. It's their wishes, their wills, and their desires is what you and any other representative is supposed to be working for. Not voting your heart-given conviction, but what do these people want? And I'm saying it once again. The federal government gets its powers from the state, as you just demonstrated. You represent those state districts at a House and Senate level, and they got the power to take you out of there. I mean, think about it. You know, Cori Bush in St. Louis, in Missouri, the 1st Congressional District, she went around campaigning with a loud horn, and every other sentence out of her mouth was about white supremacy and racism. And they had beaten up to a fervor a group of people that basically came out and voted for her without any regard of what she stood for other than white supremacists and anti-racists. That's ridiculous.
Well, I think anybody who's not white who uses the term white supremacy is a racist.
I mean, well, you know, as far as...
I just thought I'd throw that
you
out.
I mean, as far as
white supremacy, what is white supremacy? Does anybody got a good definition?
You know, I have no clue because, you know, because what I say about white supremacy, and I tell, you know, black people all this all the time when I speak in front of, you know, black congregations at churches or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, my thing is this. I say, if you believe in white supremacy, then you also must believe in black inferiority.
Yeah.
Because you can't have one without the other. So, you know, do you believe that you are inferior to whites? Then I'll be like, no. Well, so how the hell you believe in white supremacy if you don't feel like that you're inferior? You can't. The only way that you can believe in white supremacy is that you feel inferior. So you can't have it both ways.
So what would white supremacy look like if we had I mean the only white supremacist nation I know was Nazi Germany, okay, the Aryan nation, the superiority of the white race, the blonde haired blue eyed people that didn't look anything like Himmler, you know, or any of the Goebbels or any of those people. So what would white supremacy if this were a white supremacist nation? What would the government policy be? I mean, I want to out these people because they use terms like this or white nationalism. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt was white and he was a nationalist. He carried us through most of World War II until he died. You know, is that a problem? So what exactly, let's get these terms out there because these things are used all the time. It's like you say the word, people are supposed to, I guess, have this inherent knowledge of what it really means, you know, but they don't actually say what it really means. And that way, you know, it's understood. It's kind of, oh, I know what a white supremacist is. You know, he believes in the superiority of white people, you know, but what does that look like in terms of government policy? What do these people think would happen? Or do they think it is, you know, in a country with affirmative action where the white guy is like the last on the list to be hired, how can this be a white supremacist nation? Just out of curiosity.
Well, for me personally, I couldn't tell you because the Washington Post called me a white supremacist, so I have no idea.
I didn't know that. That's hysterical. Really? Now, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So now,
yeah, they printed it.
How did they explain that? How did they explain that you're a white supremacist? This is fascinating.
I mean, well, because I was what they call a far-right extremist. And then, you know, once they actually saw who I was, I think they wrote the article and didn't know who I was because I was just so so conservative,
white supremacists,
you know,
running for Congress right now.
And so, and so once I saw the article, I actually wrote back to the author of the article. And I was like, well, next time you mention that I'm a white supremacist, make sure you post my face with your article because they didn't have a picture. So then, right. You know, once they saw that, then I became the new face of the right-wing extremism because, you know, that's their code shift. You know, that's how they shifted. If you're a black Republican, they know they really can't get away with calling you a white supremacist. So now you're the face of right-wing extremism. You know, so I don't believe they even know what white supremacy is anymore because, you know, to me, and you know, in this country, there is no, you know, supreme, you know, race, you know, if you want to call it that. Because,
yeah.
I mean, here I am, you know, a black man from the ghettos of Cleveland, Ohio, spent 27 years in the Navy, you know, was able to run for Congress two terms, and where most of my constituents were white people.
know, that's so interesting. I didn't know that either.
Clue, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. You should run next time as the blackest white supremacist or something like that. I mean, just to mess with people. What's interesting to me, and this is something that Dr. Peter Pryor explained. Dr. Peter Pryor, one of my very close friends on the show. I never met him. He was on the show maybe 3 or 4 years. I believe he died of a COVID shot. 6 months after he got it, his cancer came roaring back. But Peter was a brilliant man. I think his origins go back to Russia with his family. And what he explained to us is that white supremacy is not, it's not a color-based thing. You think it is. I mean, that's the impression, and that's what people are supposed to understand. But it's really not. It's really an idea. That's how black people can be white supremacists, Larry Elder being probably the most obvious example. And what Peter explained was that it's not the supremacy of the color of people. It's the supremacy of the idea. And the white people that they're talking about are basically the British. You know, when Jonathan was mentioning earlier that communism came from Austria and Germany, and that freedom really came from Britain, you know, going back to Magna Carta, going back to the original principles, the individual, the rights of the individual, you know, rights come from God and not created by government. Therefore, they can't be taken away by government. All these things. That is what they mean by white supremacy, the supremacy of the idea that the individual is the paramount, that the individual has individual rights, that the individual rights are more powerful than the government is subservient to the individual, and the government's job is to protect the rights of the individual specifically from government. And so it's an idea. So when they call you a white supremacist, they're calling you a white supremacist because of your stand on freedom, that you believe that your supreme belief is that the individual. I'm sorry, I'll just be a quick second here. But the supremacy is the supremacy of the idea that freedom is the supreme ideal, that individuality, that the individual, the rights of the individual are supreme over the group, that the individual is supreme over the government, that the jury is supreme over the judge who represents the government, that all these things, you know, that the supremacy of individuals and individual rights is what they're really fighting, because they want group rights and communism and everybody under control of a hierarchical, tyrannical government. That was it. Pianki?
Well, that's one layman's definition. My definition of white supremacy is when you look at certain industries and categories within those industries, offshore oil, well-driven, drilling, equity financing, leverage buyouts, boycotts, and sanctions, usually the faces behind those are white. And if you don't like it, you got to compete with it. You know, I was a structured steel erector. I erected a tall office building. My company, like the ones that fell down in 9/11, that was the faces behind the other companies was white. So I've seen an opportunity where I could take away pieces of their pie to form my pie, and thus those pieces of their pie, the faces behind them was whites at that time, and basically still are today. If it's something you see going on, especially when it comes down to economics, you don't like it, then you got to compete against it. That's something that this great nation gives you. You have to compete.
Yeah, that's one thing I think the us white guys learn early on is that if we're going to get anywhere, because we don't have affirmative action, we don't have college scholarships set aside, so we don't have preferential treatment, the media hates us, you know, plus being men, you know, where we have toxic masculinity and all these other things, and being especially white Christian males, I mean, yeah, well, that, it doesn't get much worse than that, that we just have to work harder. And so no one says the first person to create Action Radio was a white Christian male, but I guarantee you, the first African-American woman or black woman that does this, or Laotian lesbian construction worker who becomes an Action Radio host, they're going to get credit, but I'm not for creating it. I mean, it's this fascinating dichotomy that, but I believe if you took the white guys out of the workforce, what do you think is going to happen? All the truck drivers and the guys that climb the poles and the accountants and the lawyers and the engineers and the doctors and the bakers and the bricklayers, you take all the white guys out of this economy, do you know what's going to happen to this country? I mean, who are the most, the greatest group that invents? Well, for some reason, white guys are generally among the largest group of inventors. You look at the computer, the airplane, the automobile. White guys. So try functioning in this world without white guys. It's not going to happen. And so I find this whole concept quite fascinating. Gentlemen?
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, another grievous thing that I've heard of recent is when the court, the high court told Alabama it needs to create
Let's talk about that. That's fascinating.
Now, that is the most ridiculous thing. And you're talking about discrimination. That is the See, courts are not supposed to make laws. On the courts, they listen to the arguments between two or more parties and give an opinion. Actually, you don't have to obey that opinion. What can they do to you? Federal government don't have an enforcement arm. What are they going to bring? Boot-wearing FBI agents to kick in your door?
Well,
wait a helmet.
You know, so
but
the
thing is that for them to say that is, and you know, this thing, blacks move from, and what they're doing is saying that all blacks are Democrats, but blacks move from districts. They move from areas and they go elsewhere because of a whole host of reasons, better schools, better climate, better property values, and less crime, and so on and so on. But when the time comes for you to draw up these redistricting lines, you got one party that would throw a lasso way over there and recapture that black person and try to bring them back into their fold. That's totally ridiculous. And they should have been told that.
Well, here's a question for you. Can a white person run in those two black districts that the Supreme Court's ordered Alabama to create? And what would that do to the whole argument? I mean, are they assuming that a black person is going to represent black people because all black think alike, according to these people? I mean, that's what they think. I mean, that's part of it's racism.
Well, look,
I mean,
at, look at Shelby County in Tennessee. Uh-huh. They represent Memphis. Uh-huh. That's a vast majority black district. But look who the congressperson is. It's Cohen. Uh-huh. Cohen is white. He has been reelected several times over, I can't think of the person that was Ford.
Uh-huh.
Ford, the father, then tried to make Ford the son. The people turned him down. The Congressional Black Caucus has got a standing rule. No whites allowed. Why come that's not been known?
Yeah.
That there is about as racist you can get from a organization that's supposed to be anti-racist and anti-discriminate. No whites alone. And guess what? They won't even allow a conservative like Tim Scott to join. And he is black as Wesley Snipes.
And again, so white supremacy is an ideal. It's an idea. It's a political philosophy. It's not a skin color. That's where it gets really interesting. And that's where their argument falls apart. And no one's ever really challenged them on it. I will. Call my show, Corey Bush. I'd love to have a discussion. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, I would like to have a discussion with Corey Bush myself. She wouldn't even respond to me. You know, so, you know, a lot of these, you know, Nina Turner, Corey Bush, you know, the Sonny Halston on The View. You know, I actually tried to get on The View. You know, they won't have me on The View for some reason, but, you know, I think they're, you know, scared of me or something. But, you know, but the thing is that, I mean, you know, they still try to capture, you know, why they do this district is because, you know, they know, unfortunately, that, you know, historically, black people are still going to vote Democrat no matter what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a shame, you know, and I would hope that black people would buck that system at some point, you know, in their lives. You know, they move away from those cities and those counties for a reason, because they're desolate, because they're impoverished, because they want to get away from the crime. You know, and so
yeah. What if black people move out of the black districts? What if these two Alabama districts they're creating artificially? What if black people move out of the black districts and they become, you know, white districts, Asian districts, or who knows what district, or just a, you know, like a lot of America, you know, mixed with everybody.
What they need to do if those black districts that they make vote Republican,
and they don't stay black districts,
you know.
No,
that's what needs to happen, you know, to make a statement. You know, just because we're black don't mean that we're Democrat any longer. So you can continue to try to group us. You can continue to try to, you know, bring us back to the plantation, but we're not going to, you know, show that we're on the plantation with our vote. You know, and once that happens, they'll stop putting those districts together like that, you know, because then they won't be able to control them. Okay, so now you just got one big black Republican district, and that's the worst thing that they want. That's a, you know, that right there would be the, you know, the death of the Democrat parties if you, you know, create these false all black districts and all those black people vote Republican. You know,
Trump should campaign.
So,
Jonathan, I can
you know
how
to do this.
Hold on,
really
Jonathan.
Should.
He's been quiet for a while.
No, I
think he's
totally
the only one that can campaign. I think he's the only one that can campaign there and probably be, you know, successful, you know, out of any of the candidates, you know, it would be him. Because here's the thing. You know, Trump wasn't a quote-unquote racist until he ran in 2015. Trump helped more black people, more black neighborhoods. He helped Don King. He helped Herschel Walk. I mean, he turned a lot of black people into community. He helped, you know, and even the black community, the rap songs, there's over 70 rap songs that was about Trump, positive things about Trump. They wanted to be Trump because they wanted to, you know, have his stature. They wanted to be strong. They wanted to have his money. You know, so the black people loved Donald Trump in the neighborhood. I'm from the hood. I know. We loved Donald Trump.
That's wild.
You know?
I love it.
And you know, so for, you know, and I don't think the majority of the black people, you hear the talking heads, you know, because they control the media. So you hear these antagonizers, right? You hear these people, you know, but it's always the same ones, right? It's always the same ones that want to, Donald Trump's racist. The majority of black people don't feel Donald Trump is racist.
Well, let's see what happens in 2024, and hopefully the election won't be stolen. The Republicans are smart enough, or Trump's smart enough, to make sure that doesn't happen. Let's get Jonathan. He's been quiet here a bit. Jonathan, what do you think
of
white supremacy?
I'm afraid it will be stolen, but the thing is, and the Supreme Court just ruled to invite, you know, I think 10 days ago, whatever, their ruling basically ended Democratic, you know, free elections in this country. But which case was that? That was the reverse of our a friend of the court brief, where they said that the legislature.
Oh, that's right.
Does
yeah.
not have the exclusive power to decide.
Let's talk about that. Because the Constitution says exactly
the opposite.
We'll
have to do that another time. But the bottom line is that means that. You know what they did means that, first of all, it's unconstitutional what they did. It violates things. But what they did was they said, you know, effectively said, is that one judge somewhere in a state, in the most liberal part of the state, and any liberal election official can overrule the legislature and put in any rules they want. So therefore, basically all, you know, there are no more free elections in this country, thanks to the Supreme Court. And again, it's like, you know, they did a couple good things, but it won't matter because we won't get free elections, and the Democrat Congress will just overrule everything that the Supreme Court did that was good. But that's the thing. But the thing is, like I was gonna comment about, I forget, there's a bunch of things that you guys were talking about.
We do move fast.
First,
yeah, you got to jump right
first
in.
First about the sheriffs, you know, my understanding is that contrary to the narrative, you know, like the Bundy Ranch standoff, is that the Bureau of Land Management and the ATF and everything, they backed off because the constitutional sheriffs showed up.
Yeah, a lot of people with guns showed up too.
Huh?
A lot of people with guns showed up too.
Yeah, but
a lot of people with guns.
Some of the people with guns were the local sheriffs.
Oh, okay.
And they said, we're the sheriffs here. You're not. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And you know, that wasn't reported that I noticed at the time.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, they should do that. But the other thing, like about the black majority district, if they draw a gerrymandered congressional district to guarantee a second black majority district, that means they have to pull black voters from other districts in order to bulk up one district.
That's what they do.
Black voters. Huh?
They would throw a lasso a mile and lasso a black family and pull them back into that Democratic district.
Right. But the net effect is that all the other districts in the state will now be more Republican. Because in order to make a black majority district, they have to do that. And so now it shouldn't be that, you know, race should have nothing to do with party. But the voters that the Democrat Party is relying upon are now going to be in the black majority district, and the rest of the congressional districts in that state will have fewer of the reliable Democrat voters. And,
you know, black communities have these gatekeepers. One comes to mind is the NAACP. The NAACP can issue travel warnings and advise blacks not to travel through states like Missouri and, of course, now through Florida. Well, what about Illinois and Chicago? Anytime that you have 4,875 blacks shot by other blacks in a year's time from Memorial Day to Memorial Day, as reported by the Chicago Tribune, ABC7, and other newspaper with 745 murders, no white police officer shot no one. And then it's another 4,000 the next year, 661 murders. This year, since Memorial Day in May, you don't have close to 200 blacks shot by other blacks, and it had barely been over 30 days. Where is the travel warning for going into those areas? And why do we continue to listen to these idiots?
Yeah.
Well, here's the secret.
Good question.
You know what I tell you? Well, here's the secret to that, right? And I'm going to give you the answer. Most, and I say most, and when I say most, I mean a very, very high percentage of black people don't even listen to the NAACP. They don't even... probably don't even know that there was a travel warning because they're not connected with NAACP, because most black people honestly know that the NAACP don't do anything for black people. Now, what you see are the same ones, and you know, the same agitators, the same people, you know, that's working for the NAACP, that's getting paid to continue to race bait, that continue to, you know, divide. You have the same people, which makes it seem like, because that's what you see on, you know, on the media, you know, and everything, to make it seem like that it's all black people or that it's a lot of black people, when it's really not. Because you can go down, you know, to Florida. Matter of fact, I just had clients of mine go down to Florida and vacation in Destin, Florida. They don't give a shit about what the NAACP says. They're not listening to the NAACP, you know. And like I said, overall in this country, people honestly know that you know, there's no racism in this country. Most of black people know that. They understand that. But they're going to put the most ignorant ones on TV. They're going to, you know, promote the BLM marches, the Antifa. You know, this is why they have to have Antifa, you know, pumping up BLM. This is why you have to have Antifa in the middle in these racist white liberal groups in the middle of BLM, because guess what? Ain't enough black people out there marching and doing it, because we don't believe in that stuff. We don't believe in that. If black people really truly believed in Black Lives Matter organization, we wouldn't need any white people or any Antifa out there in the mix throwing the bricks and burning up the shit. That's who's doing it. You know, yeah, you'll see the media, you'll see some black folks out there doing it, yeah. But as a whole, as a majority, what do you see? You see mainly racist liberals out there stoking the flames and doing the stuff out there, you know, not black people.
Yeah. Let me get Josie in the conversation. Josie Cossi has been hopefully listening for a while, but we had about 33 minutes left. Josie, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Happy 4th of July. I wanted to tell all your audience and all of you guys right now. Yeah, I've been listening to, but I'm busy and I'm about to head out to Pensacola, so it'll be a little loud in my car. But
that's okay.
Freedom, I've been enjoying the freedom in America for the last 51 years, and they're trying to take it away, and we're not going to allow that. I'm not going to go through communists again. I refuse. So I tell a lot of people that I meet and I talk to how good they have it here. Some of the folks say, America? Nah, America's going down. I said, yeah, because your attitude. The way you answer, you know, you have to stand firm. You have to love this country. And right now, all the schools are teaching our children to hate America. That's what China is doing with their children, to hate their parents. It's just crazy.
Did you hear our early caller? Excuse me, Josie, that was from communist China. Grew up on. She was a child under Mao Zedong and grew up under the Cultural Revolution. She was on earlier in our first hour, so you get a chance to go back and listen.
I put you guys on about 8 o'clock when I got up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was pretty incredible.
Late last night. Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, that's fine. But
we're
expanding.
We have it so good in America, and American people don't really realize. That's why. When I talk to a lot of people, I urge them to say, you need to kids on a mission trip. Go to some of the countries. So when you come back home, you really would appreciate what you have here. And even the poor people live very well in this country compared to other families in other countries that they don't have anything. you know. So this is one of the best countries in the world, and we're the only country in the world where we have freedom, and not like the other countries that the government is in control. But right now, this is what we're facing. This corrupt government, they want to control us, and they want to do everything that it takes to make it communist, because I believe this is the only country in the world left that is not communist, that is not under control fully of the government. And a lot of things will happen, and I know a lot of people don't believe, but when Donald Trump returns, he, vice president, will be JFK Jr., and we're getting more evidence and more evidence. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you on that. RFK Jr., maybe, but JFK Jr., I don't think so.
You want.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, but so we are going to go through darkness and tribulations for a short time, but the white hats are in control. So we're going to go through a lot. So I urge American to prepare with plenty of water, food, meds. It looks like they've been saying, some of the videos that I've been watching, 10 to 13 days maybe close. And the white hats are the one they're going to shut everything down, though. So it's just crazy what we're going to go through. Some of the people were talking about it in the event that I was in Miami also, not on stage, but off camera.
Mm-hmm.
I was backstage with Gene Ho and a lot of famous people. So they know a lot. They cannot talk a lot right now. But it's going to be a big revelation. This child trafficking movie coming out, they're putting a lot of negative things about Mel Gibson, about the actors in the movie. They're just making up a lot of stuff, Hollywood, because they don't want people to go see it. But I don't know if the American people are ready to handle this, and I think this is part of the plan, this movie, believe it or not, because I don't think the American people can handle what Donald Trump and the intelligence military will release eventually about the cabal, the child trafficking that is horrible. Horrible. I have seen videos that I will not share with other people. So please, I urge 4th of July today, the movie Freedom, it opens today. And there was a lot of previews before that people have seen, but, you know.
Oh, we've all seen the previews. They've been everywhere. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Preview the movie. Go ahead.
This is for everybody because we have less than half an hour left. Boy, it's been a quick show. The state of our liberty. I have a chart that I put on every single show that actually graphs liberty. It's one of the slides. If you look back in a previous show, you'll see it. You know, on the bottom axis, we have tyranny on the left, of course. We have anarchy on the right. And the vertical axis is freedom. And the highest point of freedom overall is liberty. And liberty is about three-quarters of the way to the right. You've got anarchy on the extreme right, and you've got tyranny on the far left. So liberty is a place that's much closer to anarchy, which is no government, than it is to tyranny, which is total government. So given that, if you could just imagine a line with absolute tyranny on the far left and absolute anarchy on the far right, where are we now in terms of our liberty? How far have we moved from, say, I believe, like the founders and this country, it was basically set up to be, you know, three quarters of the way towards anarchy. In other words, we have just enough law to protect our lives, our property, and our individual rights. That's what government does. That doesn't take a lot of law. It doesn't take a lot of government. But in the slide to tyranny, which is total government, where everything is absolutely controlled, that would be in the far left. So if you figure the centrists are in the middle, the Republicans and Democrats occupy a spot, you know, about three quarters of the way to the left towards tyranny. Where are we now? How much liberty do we actually have? If you had to graph it, put it on number on it, you know, 1 to 10, you know, 10 being ultra left tyranny, 1 being complete anarchy. Where are we now in terms of our liberty, given the fact that we have an illegal government? The government was stolen. The government chose the government. And this is the United States that the government has chosen for us, because we certainly didn't do this. So where are we in terms of our liberty? I'm going to go through Pianchi, Jerome, Jonathan, and Josie. Pianchi, where do you think we are in terms of our liberty?
It's thinking toward anarchy. I mean, take the court. That state judge, he needs to be removed. And then you got the Supreme Court. with the Roberts Court, like with the Affordable Care Act. When the question before the court was whether or not it could come under the Commerce Clause, and he said no. Then he comes with the infamous, but it could be a tax. He was not supposed to do that. It's just like these bills. A single bill should stand alone, not include everything from the birth of dawn to the holler of hallelujah. He had just had another Supreme Court decision where the Justice Roberts done the same thing. He addressed the issue, then he comes up with these infamous buts. You know who's behind those infamous buts? It's that damn Obama.
Okay. Jerome, where do you put us on our liberty scale with, say, like 10 being absolute tyranny and 1 being absolute anarchy?
Well, you know, I can say we're probably at about a 9.
Okay.
You know, being towards
that's
the
bad.
Tyranny.
That's really
well,
bad.
It is bad.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, well, it is bad because when we can have prisoners of Washington sitting in the gulag mm-hmm. for, you know, not being charged or being charged with trespassing or, you know, our guys that was just, you know, people there that were there to address their grievances as afforded to them by the Constitution. But we have a illegitimate, I say D.C. is an illegitimate police force holding these people hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And no one in our Congress, like I say, no National Guard, no one, no big security force or army force is going to save them. We underwent a coup like we've discussed before in 2020, and the country is still, I guess, not burning per se, and people actually believe that we still have liberties, but you pay property taxes, and if you don't pay your property taxes, you can have your property taken from you by the government. You know, I don't believe that we're anywhere close to being free to the right of that. You know, like the founding fathers intended, because government was founded upon to enforce three things, three rights, our life, our liberty, and the pursuit of property. That's the only reason for law enforcement anyway. That's all it's supposed to be. If a law does not, if a law impedes on your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, then it's an unjust law. Again, by Frederick Bastiat. You know, people need to understand that. And so we have laws that impede on our, you know, inalienable rights every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say we're at a 9.5.
Yeah, I got to read Frederick Bastiat because Brianna mentioned him on the show. I ordered me off the air.
Yeah, the essay,
should
the
be
law.
Studying.
It's the law.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll read it before
Bastiat's
the next.
The law essay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Jonathan, where do you put our liberty?
I think basically we're Russian serfs because of our ignorance.
Okay.
You know, I think that our liberty has not been taken from us. We've abandoned it because we don't know any better. You know, I'm pretty pessimistic that without a major education campaign, we can even recover.
Okay. I mean, that's why I get rid of the government schools, just for that one of those. That's one of the main reasons that we can actually educate the kids. Jesse, where do you put our liberty? And you've seen communism, so you know what it's all about.
It's a little noisy right now since I'm driving. Jonathan is correct. Well, so is Jerome and Bianchi. What's happening to this country, we have sold our liberty to China, to Ukraine, and to other countries. Our children, they don't believe in liberty anymore, our freedom. They're with this corruption corporation that we live under. And our freedom is not all the way gone, but if we don't do something about it, it will be gone, because that's how it started when I was a young girl. They started brainwashing young kids, and that's where you start with kids. and then before you know it, they're going to become 15, 16, 18, and they can take some action with a weapon in their hands. Our liberty is being sold by the criminal Democrats and some Republicans. And all the 100 million illegals coming into our country, it's going to be to be fighting us. That's the plan. That's the plan that they have. A lot of these people are being well taken care of right now. Some of the families are getting as much as $4,000 a month. And they're giving them expensive hotels in New York City and all that. So our liberty is being sold by our own people that we swear to pay their paycheck. So in the numbers that you were saying, I don't know if we're in a 9, but at least I will say we're in a 6 at this point. But we're going to have to stand. We're going to have to fight. And it's like you said earlier, oh, but I'm only one person. One person makes a big difference, a big difference.
We're all one person.
And you were correct, Greg, when you said that.
Yeah.
So we have to fight for freedom, and we have to fight for this country because this country is worth fighting for. And that's what I wrote in George Magazine on my article. It is worth fighting for.
We should go over that sometime. Does anybody notice the hypocrisy of celebrating our liberty and independence while we're under a tyrannical, unconstitutional, illegal government that was stolen from us? And the fact that nobody's pointing that out like we are pretty much every hour this show? How do we get that kind of hypocrisy? Anybody wants to grab that
every
question?
Every time you point it out, you got a news media which has the eyes and ears of the greater public. And they call you a gook, a conspiracy.
Oh, see, I've got a new term for conspiracy theories. We call them ongoing investigations. So that way they can't ask us about them. That's a joke. Just when I was listening.
And Jonathan
hypocrisy.
Was right. He talked about the ignorance of the people. See, that's amazing. See, like the gentleman here, I forget his name, who ran for Congress. What's his name?
Jerome Bell.
I sent you money for your campaign.
Oh, there you
but,
go.
All the way out of Louisiana in Missouri. But here's the thing. When you go before a crowd and you have to spend probably 60% of your presentation educating people on the basics, then that leaves very little time to get down to the substance of why you're seeking your congressional position. And that is a big problem. Americans have become so dumbed down. They talk about and they use the issue of reparations. I want to talk about that later. But they use the issue of denying blacks their history, like DeSantis. Well, how the heck is that? Your children in California, 75 to 80% of black males in high school cannot read at level. So what are they going to read their history in Braille? And that's pretty much the same across the board.
Yeah, that's like the definition of racism is to have substandard black education. I want to change things a little bit here because we've only got a few minutes left. And I want to go back to the whole theme of what July 4th is all about. I was going to do this right after the reading, and I just totally got carried away with our conversation. But the people that actually signed it, and I want to compare this to what's going on in Congress right now. So the people that signed the Declaration of Independence had horrible tragedies. Most of them lost their lives. They certainly lost their families, property, and everything else like that. They sacrificed everything. And when you think about the people in Congress now, there's not a single person in Congress who has sacrificed anything to get rid of the coup. And so the difference between then and now couldn't be more obvious that we have a government that is completely illegal. They know it's illegal. They support the fact that it's illegal. They still say things like Biden administration when you know there is no Biden administration. And they get away with it, but they've sacrificed nothing to remove the coup and the tyranny. So let me just go over the people that wrote it. The people that signed it. And so this will take a little bit, and then I got one thing to read, and then we'll kind of open up to you folks again. Georgia, signers were Button Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, George Walton. North Carolina, William Hooper, Joseph Hughes, John Penn. South Carolina, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward Jr., Thomas Lynch Jr., Arthur Middleton. Maryland, Samuel Chase, William Pucca, Thomas Stone, Charles Carroll in Virginia. We had George Wythe, Richard Henry Lee, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Harrison, Thomas Nelson Jr., Francis Lightfoot Lee, Carter Braxton. Pennsylvania had Robert Morris, Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Franklin, John Morton, George Clymer, James Smith, George Taylor, James Wilson, George Ross, Delaware, Caesar Rodney, George Reed, Thomas McKean, New York, William Floyd, Philip Livingston, Francis Lewis, Lewis Morris, New Jersey, Richard Stockton, John Witherspoon, Francis Hopkinson, John Hart, Abraham Clark, New Hampshire, Josiah Bartlett, William Whipple, Massachusetts, Samuel Adams, John Adams, Robert Treat Payne, Eldridge Gerry, John Hancock, Rhode Island, Stephen Hopkins, and William Ellery. Those are the folks who signed the Declaration of Independence. Let me tell you what happened to them. I'll get my article here. Let's get moved it. Here we go. State of the Nation is the news source for this. And it says, Destiny of the Signers, the Declaration of Independence. It says, when the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence attached their signatures to that document, each knew they were committing treason against the British crown. If caught and captured, they risked death, and they knew death would not be swift. It would be by hanging to the point of unconsciousness, then being received, disemboweled, their body parts boiled in oil, and their ashes scattered into the wind. Our founding fathers valued freedom for themselves and their posterity to the extent that they found this fate worth the risk. The story below tells what happened to the men who signed the Declaration of Independence. We skip down a little bit here, and it says, five signers were captured by the British and brutally tortured as traitors. Nine fought in a war for independence and died from wounds or from the hardships they suffered. Two lost their sons in the Continental Army. Another two had sons captured. At least a dozen of the 56 had their homes pillaged and burned. What kind of men were they? 25 were lawyers or jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers or large plantation owners. 1 was a teacher, 1 a musician, that would be me back then, and 1 a printer. These were men of means and education, yet they signed the Declaration of Independence knowing full well that the penalty could be death if they were captured. In the face of the advancing British army, the Continental Congress fled from Philadelphia to Baltimore on December 12, 1776. It was an especially anxious time for John Hancock, the president, as his wife had just given birth to a baby girl. Due to complications streaming from the trip to Baltimore, the child lived only a few months. We got more stories here, but I'll save that for now. You can read the article. I posted it on my Facebook page. But the point is, these people sacrificed everything. And we've lost that. You know, I mean, who's willing to sacrifice anything? We have folks that are sacrificing, you know, serving our country. But I question that there's more ways to serve your country. No offense to Jerome Bell, but to serve, we need to fight for freedom in many levels, not just military, but in civilian, you know, in the legislative world, in the political world. There's a huge battle going on right now. And yet, how, you know, those of us here sacrifice because we do this every day. But where's the sacrifice? Where's the spirit of sacrifice that we had back then that we've so totally lost now? Jonathan.
Read the ending of the Declaration of Independence. Do you have it up in front of you?
I
did. Which we celebrate the publication here today.
Okay, I can read it again. Yep, got it right here. So last paragraph, this is the one that Brianna read. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appearing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions due in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all the other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Well, it's that last part that I was thinking of. They declared it today, published on this day in 1776, their firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence. And they did pledge everything. I mean, for an Englishman in particular, they had nothing else to pledge but their lives, their honor, and their fortunes.
Mm-hmm. And what are people willing to pledge today? You know, I mean, I pledge my life to this. I think so of all of you. But we need more of us.
I mean, other than their lives and their fortunes, honor meant something to them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
let's talk about
you know,
that.
They pledged it.
What is honor? You know, what does it mean to have personal integrity, to stand for something? You know, and that's, I don't think that's taught. That's not passed on from parents to kids like it used to be. I mean, nowadays we have a world where everything can be computer verified, video done and things like that. So honor doesn't, has a different place, but it still is critical to your soul, to your being a person to have honor. And I don't think a lot of people have much honor anymore. It's like, what can they get away with?
Yeah. My Boy Scout pledge.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was my Boy Scout pledge. That's what it was. Learned very early in life what honor was. And like
yeah.
You say, it's not there anymore.
Yeah. Well, what are they teaching you like, Boy Scouts? Go ahead.
I don't know. But like you point out, how not only did they give the words, like the Republican Party, you know, has, you know, knows how to say the right words, but they don't mean it.
Uh-huh.
These people pledged everything, and they did it. You know, that most of them lost their lives and their fortunes and their
and they freely did. There was no obligation. That nobody was putting a gun to their head to do it. In fact, the guns to their head were after they did it.
Right.
They didn't have to do this. I don't think people get that. Let me bring another one of my favorite quotes here from Teddy Roosevelt, talking about the man in the arena. He said, "It is not the critic who counts, nor the man who points how strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat." And I would say everybody here is in the arena. I mean, Action Radio is in the arena. In your own lives, you're in the arena. You're doing it. And although we said men, I know that Josie, you know, is every bit the fighter than anybody else is. And so you have to be in the arena. You have to be able to do something. And I get really sick and tired of Facebook especially, where lots of people will like a great comment and say, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I don't know. The problem, you know, this acceptance of tyranny. How many people correct someone when they say Biden administration? You know, occasionally I'll let it go if it's like a really important guest because I'm not stupid. But for the most part, you don't say Biden administration on my show. You don't say President Biden. There is no President Biden. There's only an insurrectionist occupying the White House illegally. But that's how you resist tyranny.
You mean criminal Biden.
Well, yeah, that works too. But the thing is, unless you resist, yeah, thanks, Josie. But unless you resist every minute of every day, you're acquiescing, you're agreeing, you're accepting. The tyranny becomes tolerable. And Jerome, when you mentioned the Stockholm syndrome, you know, how people come to love their captors. Oh, please give me more communism. Take more rights away. Take more property. Take care of me. I'll be your loyal servant and love you for it. That's deranged. How do we get here? This isn't the country I heard about from overseas. Yeah, I get here and I think, really? An interesting place. You know, go ahead, Jonathan.
What we should recognize. First of all, doing something, you know, we do have to learn. We have to know our craft. I mean, the Bible says the teaches my thing, you know, my hands for war. And, you know, we can't be stupid. We can't just, like, walk into a trap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to know our craft and know our country and know what to do. But, you know, why is it that the system is going after these January 6th people with a vengeance, but the open insurrection against, you know, obstructing the nomination of Justice Kavanaugh, you know, openly admitting that they were trying to prevent a judge from being seated on the Supreme Court. You know, where it's not a question of what being alleged. They admitted it all over the place. You know, they got out within 5 hours on $50 bail, and then the cases were dropped. So basically, they got a $50 fine. They attacked the White House. I mean, imagine for a minute, and I don't know if Jerome is still here, but and I know we're out of time, but the countries around the world, friendly and hostile, watching this, the White House under siege.
Mm-hmm.
What would that do to military adventures? I mean, what if China had decided to take that moment to invade Taiwan?
I'm surprised they haven't, quite frankly. I'm surprised they haven't invaded Taiwan already, unless Taiwan is pretty heavily armed. But I'm just curious.
Well,
this is why I wish Yvonne Fleet was still here. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, one can speculate that they're thinking, like, why do we need to, the way things are going? But I don't know. But the thing is, and then you have, you know, Washington, D.C. here, because remember, I used to live here then. January 2017, the riots against Trump being inaugurated. They don't care about law and order with any of those, much less the civil war in our streets from really 1999 to 2022. But they're hysterical about January 6th. They're scared. You know, the establishment is more scared of the American people rising up and doing their, you know, and taking their country back than the American people are aware that they are capable of doing it.
Yeah, it's like that ant movie. Remember the kids movie with the ants and the grasshoppers? And the grasshoppers used to run the ants, and I had to watch it because I had a kid then, and my daughter was like eight, whenever that movie came out. Anyway, the grasshopper, the lead grasshopper says, you know, here, catch one grain of food or whatever it was, and then he unleashes a whole bunch of them and says, if these ants ever realize that they can gang up on us, we're history, you know, and said, and of course, one ant stood up and actually did that. Great for a cartoon, but we need to do the same thing now. That's why everybody should. Go ahead, Bianchi. We need to watch
Athens,
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
1946.
Tell me about Athens. Yeah. Back when Americans were American.
Yeah, Dale, you should watch on YouTube the documentary, Athens, Tennessee, 1946.
For anybody that doesn't know, that World War II soldiers came up and brought guns to, I'm not sure the exact, well, probably Bianchi can tell it better, but there was election fraud, and local folks didn't stand for it. They actually fixed the problem and used guns to do it. You know, they brought guns to the Bundy situation. Guns are not a bad thing. We've got them. Why aren't we using them? You know, in places like the border. I mean, what if Texas said, we're going to impose our own border on you people? But yeah, that Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Have you shown that to your families lately?
But, you know, guns are good in the right hands of people, but not in the hands of criminals. And these criminals in D.C., they want to control us with our guns. But they don't want to do nothing about the people that have illegal guns, you know, like in
the
areas where they're not supposed to have guns, you know.
Yeah.
They have guns, and the innocent people cannot defend themselves. That's what they want, and that's what communism is all about. Like in Europe, people don't have guns. So in France, people don't have guns. Only the criminals have guns. So, you know, that's what they want here. For every little shooting that they have created, all the shootings is created by the CIA, FBI, okay, in America.
I wouldn't go that far.
It's been going
on
for a long
time. I disagree with you on that. Yeah.
It's been going on for a long time. They create all these events so they can disarm us. And they've been trying and trying and trying and trying. But the American people are strong, and they need to continue standing strong for their freedom, for the Second Amendment rights, for the First Amendment. And you know, we just have to stand. That's all we can do, and pray, because God is in control. But we are taking back our country, and America is going to be like probably back in the 50s or 60s with the lifestyle that we have back then. It's coming back. And whatever says Donald Trump he's going to do, he's going to do it, and he will do it. And our country is going to be fully in charge by Donald Trump and the military.
Yes, and yeah, this is where I disagree. For those who don't know, Josie and I have an ongoing disagreement as to how this is going
to
work. I don't want a military dictatorship. I don't want, you know, yeah, we'll keep talking about it. Let me give you my vision real quickly here. What I see happening and why this election in 2024 is so critical, and each of you can do this. We can run a little overtime, and then we'll kind of hold it down for today. But the way I see this, Trump has an incredible opportunity that is a once-in-a-lifetime for all of us. That he's been in office, he knows what it's like. We know he won the second term, but he's had 4 years to plan, as opposed to so many administrations when they run. The second term is generally not very good for presidents because they just kind of run into it. They lose heart. They're lame ducks. Everybody knows it. And most of the good work is done the first 100 days of the first administration or the first term. So what I see happening now is that this is an opportunity for us, especially if we can break out of our censorship in a big way. And I'm working on some things to do that. But this is a way that citizen legislation can come to the forefront. Hold on just for a second. The citizen legislation can come to like never before, and we can do the things we've always wanted to do. And this is going to be critical for us to work with Trump. This is why I'm trying to connect with him directly. So this is the time to get rid of the Fed. This is the time to get out of the UN. This is the time to either return to a gold standard or some kind of stable monetary policy. This is the time to change the election law so they actually work for us. This is the time to do all the really big things that we wanted to do, to get rid of the income tax amendment to the Constitution, to get rid of the Federal Reserve Act, to get rid of the 17th Amendment where the states vote for senators by popular vote as opposed to have the state legislatures do it. This is the time to do it, and I see this as a very rare and very special and very necessary four-year window where we have to accomplish all the things we've talked about because we're not going to get this chance again. And ideally, we need at least a, I don't want to say Republican Congress, but we need a patriotic America First Congress to work with this and clean out the government and get rid of some of these agencies and get a constitutional amendment that bans Congress from borrowing money and pass our bill to disarm all the federal bureaucrats, all 287,000 of them, and give those guns and ammo back to the people in the civilian marksmanship program. We've got the plans. We've got the ideas. We've got the bills, and we can write more of them. We can write every bill, you know, I think with the people of this country who want to participate that can make us, you know, a free country again. And we got 4 years to do it, and
no,
I'm gearing up for that right now. That's
Louisiana,
my vision.
Louisiana,
go ahead, let's get,
we wrote bills
your,
like that that would put God
yeah, go
into God, and we trust back in bills to give parents the fundamental rights of their children. We wrote our legislative passed bills that would prevent a foreign adversary from owning land in Louisiana, and they wrote one from and passed the legislation to prevent gender reassignment surgeries and puberty blocking drugs to kids under 18. Guess what happened? The Democratic governor, Bill Edwards, vetoed every last one of them.
Right. Yeah, and that's going to happen. And so I didn't say this was easy. I didn't say this was short term, but I'm saying that we have to gear up for a Trump presidential term, and the states have to replace their governors. You know, I mean, we need more governors to do this, but if certain states can show the way, then the other states hopefully will follow. And the liberal states, they're kind of a lost cause anyway. So let me get your vision for 2024. I've given mine. Let's go Pianki, Jerome, Jonathan, and Josie. We're kind of in order here. Pianki, let's get your vision. What do you want to see happen?
I'm thinking this. You got maybe one or two more last hurrahs, then the states are going to draw lines around their borders and up going to rise out of those states, the people, quote unquote, the militia, not the National Guard, and they're going to protect those borders. I think that's what it's going to end up to. I hope it don't. We can try these other methods, but things look kind of dry and dim right now.
Okay. Jerome, what's your vision? What do you see happening? Or want to happen?
First of all, to Pianki, hey, thanks for your support on my campaign, for the financial support. I really appreciate that because it's much needed. And I can tell you, I definitely don't teach when I go out and speak. I just go speak. I normally have 3 minutes, and I don't have time to speak.
Three hours
my
today.
My vision is this. Yeah, I know, right? My vision, to be honest, if I'm foreseeing the 2024 and I'm paying attention to what's going on and what's happening, you know, I agree with Jonathan that the J6 was a PSYOP thing, and the government is very, very scared because I believe that they understood if that was 3 million armed people, you know, then we'll be on our way, I think, to recovery. And, you know, they saw what happens when 3 million or a million or whatever it was, unarmed people are out there. That could happen. But I honestly, if we're speaking today, I don't think we're going to have elections in 2024. You know, I'm watching what's happening in Ukraine. They've already, the dictator over there has already, disavowed elections for this election. I can foresee that with what's going on, all of the things that's going, coming out against Biden and against Hunter and against the government. You know, I see what's going on with China. China is just waiting. They haven't invaded Taiwan yet because, like you said, there's no reason to. Joe Biden has given them everything. I think the closer that we get to 2024, the closer that we get to President Trump being the nomination, I believe that we're going to see something happen here in the United States with all the invasion that's going on. We don't know who's here. We know that there's enemies of America here. We know that there's cells here. We know that there's dirty bombs that have come across the border through the tunnels. So we know all of this. Well, maybe we don't know, but I know a lot of the things that has transpired here, and what could, take place. All they need to do is just make a call.
Well, we need to do a show on that. So, I'll be talking to you because you just released a bombshell, literally. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that we do have elections. So looking on the, on the positive side of that, President Trump becomes the president again. He puts people around him completely that are America first soldiers, yep. that love America, not these people. He needs to get rid of the Lindsey Grahams, the McCarthys. He needs to stop, endorsing these people, putting these people behind him. He needs to surround himself with total patriots that's going to, do what we need to do in this country to implement all of those changes that we need to put in place to free the people of the United States again. So I'm hoping for that. I don't believe it will happen, but I hope that, if that takes place, then I hope to be a part of it, in the restoration of America and free this country from the communism and from the coup that took place.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Jonathan?
What?
What's your vision?
Okay.
And then Josie.
Well, either they steal the election in 2024 or President Trump will be will win the election. Everything that has happened since then has made it easier for them to cheat and steal. And the only way they're not going to steal the election again is if every conservative, is looking over their shoulder. But again, the courts are doing everything they can to make it, even if you catch them, the courts aren't going to do anything. So it all comes down to, are they going to steal the 2024 election? Are we going to let them? Or, Trump will be the next president.
Yeah, we should talk about RFK sometime. We'll save that for another show because I see those two teaming up as the only non-deep state candidates. And I know that because the GOP hates Trump and the Democrats hate Robert Francis Kennedy Jr. I like both of them for different reasons, but it should be interesting. Josie, what's your vision? And then we'll call it quits for the day.
My vision is in order to have a 2024 election, we have to fix 2020 first. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So if that doesn't get fixed, there will not be a 2024 election, period. Donald Trump will come and reclaim his 2020 elections, and that's what we're hoping for first. The corruption will not exist anymore. I know they're going to try, but President Trump is in full control with their white hats and the intelligent military. That's all I have to say. And
okay.
God bless you guys. Happy 4th.
Yeah. God bless all of you. Now I'm going to play my announcements and commercials that I usually do incorporate during the show, but this one was too important, so I just wanted to save all that stuff for later. Any final comments by anybody? We'll adjourn for today and reconvene soon with your regular reports. And, of course, Jerome, you're welcome anytime. Going once, going twice? Okay.
Yeah, Bill,
thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, oh,
come
yeah.
Back,
I appreciate
you.
When I have time, I'm always here. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
And
well,
invite your children. And one other thing before you go, Greg, bring your kids. See, that's one of the detriments that I view upon these gatherings. They're a bunch of old people. Not that I have anything against them. I'm old myself. Bring your kids.
Well, this is why I work so hard to get younger folks on the show. I mean, we have a few. We'll see if we can get Amber back and Candace back. You know, they're fairly young. But our youngest person, you know, is a teenager. So we're actually working on that. But we need to get more of those folks on the show. So that's one of my goals, is to get as many young people involved with Action Radio as we can. Okay, take care, everybody. That's it for our special July 4th show. And again, replay the first hour especially. That was our reading. So share this everywhere, and let's get the word out. We have work to do. We have lots of work to do. I'm going to mute you all because you're making noise. Someone's already making breakfast. Anyway, so I'll meet you. But we're going to have to keep going. This is not the end. This is the beginning, as they say, and we have tons of work to do. So let me give the websites again so everybody knows where to find us. The website you're listening to right now is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site is writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. My Substack is gregpenglis.substack.com. Our contribution site is givesendgo.com/actionradio. And my public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. So I'm going to play a couple of musical selections today because it's fun. And I'll play some announcements. And then we'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time, where we do it all again. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care. Better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elba Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines.